CRBE.com. You got to go there. You got to figure out where I've been for the last 2 weeks and then go to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. That's all a little confusing. Just go to the website, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com, and get in on the contest. Very nice prize coming up, too. And what we're doing is pretty easy. It's pretty easy. And the question is, where have I been for the last couple of weeks? Actually, I wasn't gone the whole couple of weeks, but I was gone on vacation for 8 days. And so there's a photograph of me. And the question is, where in the world was I? That qualifies you for the drawing. We'll do the drawing at about midnight Eastern time. And I say Eastern time because there's people listening all over the country and all over the world on the World Wide Web, either through WRIF.com, the radio station that we're broadcasting from, or radiopower.org. Radiopower.org, and the fine people at radiopower.org, they also rebroadcast this program twice on Monday. So you can go to their website and find the details. And then if you've missed that as well, you can always go to whiterosesociety.org, and the fine folks there archive this show. And they go back years, even to the daily Peter Werbe show on the IE America Radio Network. All right, so we're going to give you, how should I do this? All right, I'm not going to start talking about where I was and what I think the importance of my little jaunt was, although I ebb and flow on the importance of it all, till about 11:30 Eastern time. So in the meantime, you can go to peterwerbe.com. You can get in on the contest. Although, actually, this would be a good time to thank people as well. Particular thanks to Mike McIntyre, who sat in for the last couple of weeks and did a fine job. I even heard a bit of him through the World Wide Web, pretty far away, too, so this stuff works. Also, of course, to my producer, Jay Hudson, to Ralph Dizzy, who has been doing the phone. So when you call 313-298-WRIF, you get Ralph Dizzy. Say hello. If you're ringing the phones right now, for some reason or other, Roth isn't picking them up, but I'm sure he will real soon. So just hang on for that. So let's see. Oh, yeah. And, oh, did I say I got a nice prize? Did I say I got a nice prize to hand out to the person who goes to peterwerbe.com? Want to spell it one more time. PETERWERBE.com. There's a photograph of me elsewhere on the planet other than Michigan. And you'll see, by the way, I'm attired, that it couldn't possibly be this snow-benighted region of the planet. I used to like winter and winter sports, but I don't know. Anyways, Jay Hudson, the Night Call producer, is having a birthday bash this coming Thursday, and that's going to be out at the US 12 Bar and Grill. It's going to be a hot time. You can go to US12bar.com. US12bar.com. It's a birthday bash for JJ. Happy birthday to you. And lots of great bands are going to be out there, and Jay is going to be holding forth. So check that out this coming Thursday. All right. What should we talk about? Well, the Oscars are going on, and I didn't dare watch them, of course, always concerned with my manliness. What am I talking about? Chris Rock, the host, said, "I don't know any straight men, not in show business, that watch the Oscars." That's what Chris Rock said. "I don't know any straight men, not in show business, that watch the Oscars." So I just watched a little of it. Actually, I was lucky. I saw Carlos Santana and Antonio Banderas do the song, the Spanish language nominated song for best song that came from Motorcycle Diaries, and it's this foreign film, Spanish film. Actually, what country is it from? I saw it. Is it from Spain or is it from one of the South American countries? Anyways, it's about the trip throughout South America in the early 50s by Che Guevara and a friend, and they travel on a motorcycle. So there was Carlos Santana, Antonio Banderas doing the singing. Very cool. I did also sneak a peek because I wanted to be a manly man, and Chris Rock says, "I don't know any straight men not in show business that watch the Oscars." So, I mean, I would kind of glance sideways at it, you know, or peek through a doorway or something like that. But I did see Robin Williams come in. Now, Robin Williams was one of the funniest men on the planet. He was censored. He was going to do this little song, and ABC told him that he just couldn't do it. Williams was the presenter of the Academy Award for the Best Animated Feature. And he decided last week that his 1 minute on stage would be a primetime lampoon of James C. Dobson. And Dobson runs one of these kooky right-wing groups called Focus on the Family. You know, these Christian nuts are just trying to take over our country. And that's not to put down Christians. It's, in this case, Christian is an adjective. Christian nuts. So we have these whacked out, you know, kind of similar to the people that were fighting in Iraq and other places, these fundamentalists that want to shove their religion down all of our throats. And it's just coming so fast and furious. It's amazing. So you can, you know, they can say anything. They can do anything. They can make the most outrageous statement. But if anybody has the temerity to, wait a minute here. To criticize them. I just saw something on the screen here. Hey, Raf Dizzy, have you notified this person yet? We're going to have a lot more entries to our contest. It would be so, okay, so don't do that. He already picked the winner. Now, the winner is the person who is who figures out from my website, peterwerby.com, where I've been for the last couple of weeks. Then we're going to do a drawing at midnight. So that's about, you know, 50 minutes from now, Ralph. So hold on. Anyways, Dobson has this group called Focus on the Family. They're to these right-wing Christian nuts who are just trying to alter our secular nation and make it into kind of like Iran or, you know, Afghanistan under the Taliban. They just got a different religion. That's all. Same deal, and it would have the same oppressive effect. We've talked about this any number of times. Remember, I've always said, one nation under God, Iran? That's the way it'll turn out. So these people are extraordinarily dangerous. Remember why the pilgrims and all those other people left England, hey? It was because there was a state church. There was a state church, and whenever you commingle the church and the state, each of them have their drawbacks, greatly, in my opinion. But it's all right. You know, that's why they've got churches and mosques and synagogues and temples and stuff like that. So religious people, they can go pray to their gods. I don't believe in any of it. All right? So that's okay. That's okay. Good people often are involved in religion and do good works. And, you know, we kind of want to overlook all the history, like the Crusades and the Inquisition and all. You know, it's history, right? So, but in any event, both the Crusades and the Inquisition, this hideous extension of religion into the lives of people abroad, a religious crusade that all these armies went to the Middle East and conquered Jerusalem, slaughtered when the Christian armies took over Jerusalem in the 12th century, I believe. I'm forgetting all my history. By hand, the Christian crusaders slaughtered 30,000 Muslims. So that's when Bush, remember, he came out and said at the beginning of all this that it was going to be a crusade. And they go, no, man, don't say that. It's not a crusade, you moron. Then he changed it, right? And then the Inquisition. So that was what I was saying earlier about this is the state and religion. So we don't want the religion in daily life. We don't need it. For instance, you say, oh, well, it brings such morality to our life. And we have the Ten Commandments staring us in the face all the time. And in God we trust and our money and start school days with a prayer and all that stuff that will be this moral and ethical nation. Well, the countries that have, how would you say it? Probably the highest ethical, adherence to the highest ethical standards aren't religious ones, dear friends. They're Canada, they're the northern tier countries, they're Europe in general, and they are way secular. In fact, it's almost the more corrupt a society is, the more religious it is. Or maybe it's the other way around. The more religious a society is, the more corrupt it is. When people exercise their religion, their spirituality, their belief in God or gods or goddesses, and they do it on their own time in their private institutions, then it generally, you know, works for the people that are involved. Sometimes it works for society at large because those folks often do good stuff. Connected up with the political state, it's curtains. So we have to be way on our guard for the religious nuts that have got not a toehold, not a foothold. They're jumping on us with both feet. And we've got to resist them. We've got to repel them. We've got to create the society this was intended to be, and that was a secular society. And I don't care how many times the Declaration of Independence says God or whatever, or how much on our money it says in God we trust. That's not the issue. All right. Anyways, Williams was going to make fun of the president of the Focus on the Family because the group had criticized the cartoon character SpongeBob SquarePants for appearing in a video about tolerance that the group called pro-homosexual, right? We've talked about this as well. For some reason or other, these people never say homosexual. They always say homosexual. I don't get it. But they're really worried about the homosexual agenda. And even the Pope, I mean, here's this guy sick there, open up his throat and all that. And he takes time out to declare homosexual marriages. My friends, some of my friends, you know, next time I get married, I'm not marrying a woman, I'm marrying a guy. Just so I can say, screw you, right-wing Christians. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to marry a guy. And on my honeymoon, I'm going to hug a tree and burn my bra. That's what I'm going to do. I mean, like, for real. Anyways, he says homosexual marriages are part of a, quote, new ideology of evil. So here are my pals, women that I know, men that I know, that love each other deeply, that care about one another, and this character calls their unions a new ideology of evil. This is such an insult to my friends. You say, call him a character, he's the most respected religious figure. Hey, you start saying that, you know, I'm tough on people that are trying to hurt my friends. And essentially, here is, you know, some of these right-wingers, they think that they're so cute. They said, you know, God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. Oh, hey, man, that's really funny. Well, I know Adam and Steve. I know a bunch of Adam and Steves. And I wouldn't trade them as friends or neighbors in my community for any of these whacked-out, tight-lipped, tight-butt Christian right-wingers, I'll tell you. Let's see. He says, it is legitimate and necessary to ask oneself if this is not perhaps part of a new ideology of evil, perhaps more insidious and hidden, which attempts to pit human rights against the family and against man. That's what the Pope writes. Makes no sense. He also compares abortion to the Holocaust, which is really pissing off Jewish groups. Yeah, I mean, I don't blame him either. Sex. Talk a little more about that. Hey, by the way, I didn't just come here to rave. If you don't like what I'm saying, call me up, 313-298-WRIF. Or if you like what I'm saying, call me up, 313-298-WRIF. Also, The Simpsons now. See, why am I blocking on his name? I will think of it in 1 second, the creator. Groening. What is his first name? Why can't I think of it? He doesn't even say anything. Anyways, I'll think of it in a second. Don't even bother to call her, right? There was an episode, I guess it was last week, about on the Fox channel. The longest-running situation comedy, sitcom, in TV history, which is The Simpsons. And Marge Simpson's sister, Patty Bouvier, came out of the closet, and Homer Simpson is conducting dozens of same-sex weddings because small town Springfield is going to be put on the map for tourism, because, you know, they're doing this, which always brings attention. Two people getting married and everybody whacks out. Why? I don't know. But I guess I didn't see it, but I guess it was exposed because the woman who was marrying Marge Simpson's sister, Patty, turned out to be a guy. And I think it was Bart or Lisa saw him shaving and singing, Dude Looks Like a Lady. So, hooray for The Simpsons. And let's see, according to Marty Kaplan, Associate Dean of the University of Southern California, Annenberg School of Communication, it's saying those who demonize homosexuality, which includes the Pope, or what they call the homosexual agenda, anything from lighten up to get out of town. Now, he's probably a nicer guy. He'd probably say to these people that demonize homosexuality, including the Pope, lighten up. I say, get out of town. Get out of our faces. That's what I'd say. We don't need you. And, you know, the right wing, the Christian right, is such a bunch of frauds. And they turn out gay children at such an incredible rate. The latest gay child to out him or herself is, you know, that really far right-wing nutball, Alan Keyes. He ran against the senator from, I'm not remembering anything today, the senator from Illinois, Obama. He just saying the most insane stuff. Well, his daughter has just come out. Randall Terry, the big abortion opponent, his child came out, and Dick Cheney. So what is it with these arch-conservatives that they wind up with these gay children? Could be just, you know, the percentages. All right, one more thing on sex, and then we'll go to dope, right? Because that's what talk shows are made. We're not going to talk about anything political tonight, although I'm kidding, because all of this is political. The Supreme Court of the United States has said that it's all right for states to ban sex toys. So all those, if you look at the Metro Times or the Real Detroit magazine or something like that, or just all these stores that sell sex stuff, right? In Georgia and Alabama and where else? Probably Texas, right? It's okay. Yeah, that's right. Good guess. Where else? Georgia, Texas, and Alabama, where they also have a lot of executions. So you can execute people at a fast clip, but you can't sell sex toys to them. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected on Tuesday a challenge to an Alabama law that makes it a crime to sell sex toys. The High Court refused to hear an appeal by a group of individuals who regularly use sexual devices and by two vendors who argued the case raised important issues about the scope of the constitutional right to sexual privacy. But you see, under these right-wing wackos, there is no privacy. They want to know. This is, you know, they always claim that they're against tyranny, they're against the oppressive state, and everywhere you look, they're supporting the insertion of the political state into your life. So, that's right. When I marry a guy, I'm also going to buy a bunch of vibrating dildos, too, just to say screw you to these people. Let's see. The law adopted in 1998 allowed the sale of ordinary vibrators and body massagers that are not designed or marketed primarily as sexual aids. What business is it of theirs? What the hell anybody does with sexual toys? You know, as someone showed me on these vibrators that they say, you know, not to be used below the waist. So, yeah, I mean, it's nonsense. That's what all these things are sold for. This is what I mean. We are in a period of repression in many ways similar to the 1950s when there was all this anti-communism hysteria. And now we have, you know, terrorist hysteria and we have secular hysteria. But still, these right-wingers, these busybodies that care whether or not you or I use a sexual toy, something primarily... There's actually language in it. Let me see if I can find that real quickly. The law prohibited distribution of, quote, any device designed or marketed as useful primarily for the stimulation of human genital organs. What twistoid right-winger wrote that in Alabama? I mean, you'll find out, of course. He's got one way up. Never mind. I shouldn't say it. I think you can say stuff like this at this time of the night, but I still don't want to. I'm old school. I don't want to say that. First-time violators can face up to a $10,000 fine for the distribution. So if you're selling me a device designed or marketed as useful primarily for the stimulation of human genital organs, you could face up to $10,000 fine and 1 year in jail. What is wrong with a device primarily for the stimulation of human genital organs? Why isn't that a positive in and of itself? Or if you don't think it is, what the hell business is it of yours to act through the political state to repress me from doing that? Now, what does it say about Viagra and all that? That has only one purpose, and that is the same purpose as a, where was this? I wanted to get the language. A device useful primarily for the stimulation of the human genital organ. So all of Bush's buddies in the pharmaceutical companies that make billions of dollars, and they can make billions of dollars to do essentially what this device designed as useful primarily for the stimulation of human genital organs, except this is doing it internally. You gotta get rid of these people. Anyway, this shows you, this next story, that that you can be a drugster, not a drugstore, but a drugster, a druggie, and be successful. You know, I saw this whole thing about how the New York Times broke this Bush marijuana story. There was a front page report by Doug Weed. Okay, sure. Doug Weed, W-E-A-D. What else would his name be talking about marijuana? He's a Christian activist who published a book that was based in part on conversations with Bush that Weed secretly recorded in 1998-1999. On Weed's tapes, whose authenticity the White House does not dispute, Bush came close to admitting he had smoked marijuana and avoided answering a question about whether he had used cocaine. Bush said, "I wouldn't answer the marijuana questions. You know why, Mr. Weed?" Got these guys. I mean, why aren't they, if they should be all frog marched in handcuffs off to the world court for all the crimes that they've committed? But at least shouldn't they be laughed out of town? So here's Bush. "I wouldn't answer the marijuana questions. You know why? Because I don't want some little kid doing what I tried." Why not? You are a high barking dog. You snorted up half of Peru. You're smoking all this bomb reefer. You're this insane party boy. And you wind up to be a multimillionaire and president of the United States. So why wouldn't you want anyone to do that? I mean, that's part of the success story. So when you're 19 to 26, or he was like, tossing down all the Jack Daniels, too. When did he do that? I mean, I got a tape of him drunk on his ass in like 92, so way beyond where he even says. So the message should be that you can do all this stuff when you're young, and then you get real hypocritical and you say, well, everybody ought to be arrested who does all this stuff. I can't stand these people. But how about you? How do you feel? 313-298-WRIF, if you're anywhere on the planet. Some, if it's local, of course, doesn't cost too much. If you're listening in Shanghai or in Buenos Aires, it's going to cost you a little bit. All right, one more thing, too. I'll remind you one more time. We're doing a contest. I've been gone for 2 weeks, and there's a photograph on my website, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. And then if you guess where I was, you're in the drawing for a really sharp prize that's connected to where I went. Okay. Is there anything more? Oh, yeah, chat room. Yeah, you can do a little chat with other people while you are listening to the show. Go to Tom Hartman, any way you spell it. If you know how to spell it, a little different spelling. But you can just go to T-O-M-H-A-R-T-M-A-N or something like that. Tom Hartman. It's T-H-O-M-H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N. And during this program, Tom lets us use his chat room. Why don't I set my own chat room? Too much trouble. All right. So let's see if I remember even how to do this. Oh, yeah. I got to find, we have these little faders here. Tell one, that ought to do it. And let's see. Take, and it is Jeremy from Livonia. Jeremy, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Peter. I was watching the Academy Awards, and Chris Rock, he was making fun of Bush and touching on Fahrenheit 9/11, how it was a great movie, and I just thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, he was pretty. I mean, I sometimes worry about, even at this time, about language, and I heard he was, first thing he said, "Sit your asses down." I was going, well, I guess I could say that as well. They haven't announced, we'll announce the best picture, probably Aviator, which I have not seen, but the movie I loved the best was Ray. The biopic of Ray Charles.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie, but Fahrenheit 9/11 should take it.
It's not even in the running.
Yeah, it's not in the running, but it's a great movie.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much, Jeremy. Appreciate your call. And let's see, continuing on. All the way from Grand Rapids, here's Tim. Tim, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to touch base on a little Christian thing. I'm a big Motley Crue fan. I was just at the concert last Friday, and there's a lot of things about Christian people. I mean, and I hear a lot of things that a lot of people say about us. I'm a heavy metal person.
Yeah.
But, I just want to touch base that it's more of a it's more of a lifestyle than religion.
What is Christianity?
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's more like because there's people out there that care about somebody else, you know, and they try to do whatever it is, you know, to help them out. I consider that being a Christian, you know.
I must be a Christian. Hey, I don't want to give away because we got this contest going as to guessing where I was on my vacation, but I met some Christians that were where I was. In fact, they were from Detroit. Shocked the hell out of me to run into them. That were doing exactly. They were there in this country, the country we were in, for exactly the reasons you were talking about, helping people. So I said, it's not bashing Christians. Because that's a noun, it's essentially bashing nutballs that use their Christianity to for hypocritical and political reasons.
Okay, I must have missed that part. I just heard all stuff about Christians, and I'm like, you know, wow, because you know I got homo friends. And, you know,
some of my best friends are homos.
You know, I mean, let's just say. That type of lifestyle, you know, the gay pride, you know. I don't see anything wrong with loving somebody else as far as, you know, if you're female, you're male, or whatever. I mean, God says to love everybody equally.
He does. That's a good idea. It's true. All right. Thank you very much, Tim. Thanks for calling in from Grand Rapids. Oh, on this trip, you know, I'm sorry to say this because this sounds like I'm just trying to be... too hip, but my favorite people, they could even be listening. My two favorite people on this trip I took, it was a tour, and they were a gay couple, so they were my absolute faves. If you're listening, hi, I won't embarrass you by saying your name. Maybe you're saying, why won't I say your name? Why won't I give you the credit by name? All right, wait a minute here. Release this. They're on the screens now. This is how we communicate. Ralph Dizzy is taking your phone calls at 313-298-WRIF, and we have dueling mouses. He's in the other room. Dueling cursors. So, all right, well, let me get the call. Get your hands off it. All right, okay. Here's Matt in Westland. Matt, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
I agree wholeheartedly with what you were saying about the gay marriage thing.
Uh-huh.
That... If a man and a man love each other, a woman and a woman, or a man and a woman, it's all the same thing. I mean,
So why do you think people get so bent out of shape?
Because they're dumbasses.
Well, simply said, my friend, yeah. Yeah, they are dumbasses. And you know what? I'll tell you why they're even more dumbass than one would think just on the face of it. Because people have the right... even though I think it's dumb, to have prejudices. That's okay. I mean, it actually isn't okay because it's not good for one's individual personality to hold, you know, to take a whole class of people based on some shared characteristic and dislike them because of that. But I'm not going to go up to these people and shake them by the lapels. But when they turn prejudice into discrimination or into public insults, like the Pope's, like talking about that homosexuals are part of an ideology of evil, well, damn, what is that all about, hey?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's ridiculous. Love is love, no matter who's dealing and supplying with it.
Yeah, what do those old guys sing? All you need is love. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call, Matt. Best actor. How cool. Jamie Foxx for Ray. Well, I think they had to do it because Chris Rock, he said, Jamie Foxx is not getting out of the Oscars tonight without a statue. He said, if I got to grab one from somebody else. Now, if you haven't seen Ray, you got to see this film. It is so fantastic. For one thing, it's got... the actual music. Jamie Foxx is actually lip syncing. It's not like what was it, Beyond the Sea, the biopic about Bobby Darin, which I don't know, didn't even sound that interesting to me. I didn't even go to see it. All right. We got another call, I think. But, hey, my man, Roth Dizzy, you got to tell me, who is the person? Who are we going to take next at 313-298-WRIF? Okay, good. It's Danny in Ferndale. Hi, Danny from Fabulous Ferndale. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, how are you? I'm a girl, actually.
Okay, is it Danny, though?
Yeah.
All right, that's all right.
I'm actually sitting in the car with my girlfriend.
Yeah?
We were just kind of driving down the road and heard homosexual, and we wanted to hear about it.
Okay.
And we've been together for 2 years. We're practically married. My dad is gay, and we think that gay marriage should happen.
Why not? Yeah, why shouldn't it?
I don't know. People have this, like, strange view, and those assholes that you're talking about that were, like, Christian, you know, oh, my God, it's wrong.
Yeah.
They all, you know, they're the ones that need to burn in hell. Seriously.
Well, I think some of them are so mean, if there is a hell, which I don't think there is, but they certainly would be the prime candidates, because if there actually is a loving God in the way some of these people talk about, you never know it from the way they are, that they actually worship a loving God. You would look at somebody like me who says that he doesn't believe, that he'd never been to church or anything like that, and say, look, the guy, to use Matt's words, look, the guy's a dumbass. I've been here, I'm here, and I'm not going to send Peter to hell because he's been nice in the world, and he's been a good person in the community, and he's been loving. But the fact that if you don't, if you don't publicly say, you know, I believe, you're going to go to hell forever. What a dumb concept.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And we go to school every day. We're still in high school, and we go to school every day, and we get those looks of, like, ew, and, you know, there should be an Adam and Steve, and there should have been an Amanda and Eve. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, there probably was.
Hot too.
Hey, you know, Danny, they're one of the things that these right wingers say is that that homosexuality is not natural, which is absolutely crazy because it has existed throughout the human experience on the planet.
I mean, did you see the movie Alexander?
I didn't.
Okay, total gayness going on in that movie. I'm not kidding. They didn't hide it or anything. Alexander the Great was gay. That's all there was to it.
I think he was doubling his pleasure.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? Seriously.
Like for pagans, I can't even remember the slogan, but it's something, do as thou wilt, hurt no one.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
As long as you even have the right to hurt yourself. I mean, that's why I'm completely libertarian on drugs as well. Even having had lots of friends that have hurt themselves badly on drugs and on booze, even to the point of death. And it makes me very sad, but, you know, it's nothing, you don't put people in jail for that. You find ways within your community that you can help people. But these people that say they love the Lord so much, they are the most punitive, discriminatory, hypocritical people on the damn planet. And they're all of a sudden...
Everybody, and it's like, I love people, and we're going to be nice to people, but only these certain people. If you're not in the certain people, then you're going to hell. And that's so not right.
It's uptight, white, and all right. That's what they think. And,
exactly.
You know, they are so 20th century that they ought to get a clue. Danny, I got to do a little business. Thank you so much for your call. Good luck on your relationship, and don't let people grind you down.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye now. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Build it and they will come.
What'd you say there, fella?
Build it and they will come.
Speak up there, bud.
I said build it and they will come.
Well, you're a gall-darned idiot. If you think just because you build a Harley-Davidson dealership, folks will just show up, you gotta give them what they want, for crying out loud. Out in Metro Detroit, this is Biker Bob, and I'm coming to Motown in March to bring you the newest Harley-Davidson experience.
Who's Biker Bob?
Oh, my gosh, it's
Biker Bob is coming to Detroit.
My new dealership is focused on one thing. Can do. Smiling faces serving all your Harley-Davidson needs, from sales to rentals, service to storage, orange clothing to chrome. Biker Pop has everything you need to keep you on the open road with the sun kissing on your face and the wind pushing your backside. Biker Bob's is always a fun place to hang out all summer long with good times guaranteed. Listen right here on WRIF for my 60-second late-night radio talk show for advice on your motorcycle questions. We're coming to Detroit March 4th, 2005. If you want more info, you can jump onto that there World Wide Web at www.bikerbobsharley.com.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We had Jamie Kennedy in studio, and he was telling us about his pre-celebrity days in Hollywood waiting tables.
I worked at this place called Veggie Gourmet. There was these two brothers that owned it, and they were from Brooklyn. They talk like this. You know, they do it. But they were vegans. But they were like the Sopranos. And it was so weird.
You eat all the soy sauce. You eat all the soy tofu. Who would you eat the tofu for?
So Ron Jeremy would come in, and when he'd come in, they'd go, "Hey, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, it's Ron Jeremy." And like they would clap for him. Like there was like one person in the room. Like, it goes, "Ron Perlman."
Yeah, yeah.
And then they turn to me. They go, "Hey, idiot." I go, "Treat Ron. Give him anything he wants. Okay? He's really good people."
So a hedgehog comes in. Ron would be on the phone and be like, he's like, "Yeah, hold on a second. Yeah, do you have organic apple juice? That's organic, right? All right, I'm going to have that. Yeah, hold on. Okay, wait. What time is the orgy scene?"
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. 101-101.
W-R-I-F.
Riff. Rocks.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Tenney Street Roadhouse, located on West Village Drive in the heart of West Dearborn. Tenney Street Roadhouse features great American food and great American music.
Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Lunchtime Rocks with the Doc.
You pick the Riff Rock.
You win the prizes.
It's the High Noon All Request Lunch Hour.
Weekdays at noon with the Doc of Rock, Doug Podell.
Only on 101
WRIF. Detroit's Rock Rock Station.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We took advantage of our time talking to Al Roker from the Today Show to point out Matt Lauer's hair and how horrible it is. I can't look at him. He looks like horrible.
He's freaking everyone out, Al. You guys just don't know it.
Let me just check here. He's on TV. You guys are on radio. Let's see.
We're just talking about his hair. We're not knocking the guy.
You do a focus group on this guy, and people hate his hair.
They don't hate his hair.
Yes,
nobody
they do.
Hates, they don't hate his hair.
Yes, they do.
They don't hate his hair.
They do.
I said they don't.
They do.
Don't.
Infinity.
Don't.
Infinity plus one.
Super triple double infinity.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. 101.1.
Riff.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Bellacino's Pizza and Grinders with 17 locations. Go to Bellacino's.com to find a Bellacino's near you.
Log on to www.WRIF.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago. The Riff's All Request Rip and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit. Weekday nights at 9 on 101 WRIF, Detroit's Rock Station.
With the guy that gave me the interview that he smoked on some trees, right?
Well, no, he said he wouldn't answer the question, but he said he didn't want kids doing what he had done.
To me, that guy is a complete douchebag. I'm a lefter forever and ever, man. And just to know that my president was on cocaine and smoking trees is just probably one of the greatest accomplishments ever by any president that I've ever, like, seen or heard in this country, dude. I love that shit.
Hey, Bernie, you know that that Bush is the only president ever to enter the White House with a rap sheet, with an arrest record.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to touch on one other thing is.
Sure.
Is that I was listening to you. I've been waiting for quite a while, man. But there's this guy named Matt on the thing, dude. When I heard that, dude, I couldn't tell if that was a man or a woman.
I think it was a younger, you know, a younger guy.
Oh, there we go. So it was a guy, see?
Yeah.
Me and my buddies are about to play this, go out and play some night paintball, man, and we were just listening to your shit, dude, and we were laughing so damn hard. Dude.
Well, good. All right, have a ball. Make sure you wear eye protectors. Thanks, Bernie. Appreciate your call from up there. And out to Brighton, Michigan. Hey, you're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Go ahead.
Hey, it's civil rights, right?
Whatever.
Okay. Anyways, I just wanted to say that... to the gay community, if they're so concerned about getting married in a system that was created by religious, you know, Christian, oppressive Christians, why are they so worried about doing that when Christians hate them?
Well, you know what? There actually are some gays that that don't want to be married and don't want to be part of the system exactly in the way that you define it. But two friends of mine, two women actually that live in Boston and that are that one who is a publicist, she said that it's important to have full recognition. I mean, if you can imagine that suddenly a country said that blacks couldn't marry whites, could you imagine that?
Yeah, that'd be pretty messed up.
Well, of course, that was the law in the United States until 1967. But let's say even a more ridiculous thing, that Jews couldn't marry. That actually people with similar characteristics couldn't marry. And that was a law like in Nazi Germany, that there couldn't be legal marriages because they weren't recognized as human beings. And when a society... I mean, Michigan disgraced itself in the last election by voting in this constitutional amendment. So in the founding document of our state, it says that gay men and gay women who love each other, who are committed to one another, who sometimes have late relationships going back decades, don't have full human qualities. And that's pretty insulting. And that's a pretty hard thing to live with. So I kind of understand the more radical position of saying, hey, I don't want to be part of what some like gay radicals call straight society. But on the other hand, to be defined as less than human is pretty insulting and something that we should remove as a stigma from people. All right, thanks a lot. Got some news here. All right, the best picture. Now that's a surprise. Million Dollar Baby, the Clint Eastwood film about the woman boxer. And also, achievement in directing goes to Clint Eastwood. That's absolutely amazing. So he swept it. Everybody thought it was going to be Aviator. So Clint Eastwood walks home with it all. That actually has a message that the right-wing Christians don't like at all. Where is... I've been holding this email. I like to do this every once in a while. Let's see. This is Joe... doesn't say where he's from, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, what do conservatives actually conserve? They're certainly not conservationists because they don't conserve trees, water, rainforests, etc. They may claim to conserve life, but their tendency to march to war nullifies that argument. I actually thought at one point that they were conservative because they conserve money. Laughably wrong. What do they conserve? I'd love to hear your answer, but again, I would also like to hear what others would have to say. Thanks, buddy. Well... they always conserve the status quo. The status quo is usually wrong because we had a revolution in 1776 and the conservatives were all against it. They supported England against George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, Benjamin Franklin, and all of that. And then, in fact, they were so put out that the colonists won that a lot of them moved off to Canada. And then they wanted to conserve the voting patterns that had been established, the weak voting patterns that were established in the original Constitution, that that said only white propertied males could vote. That was it. And also they supported, and one of the things that a number of founding fathers had to compromise with, not only was slavery permitted in the United States, but the slave trade was okay. You could still import slaves into the United States in 1803. The conservatives wanted this. And then, the conservatives created the worst... the conservatives turned out to be the worst traitors in American history. That's, the Confederate Rebellion. Responsible for 500,000 deaths, the destruction of their region of the country, and created a social, political, cultural situation that we still have not completely recovered from. Of course, the conservatives then didn't want women to vote. The conservatives backed every war of imperial expansion, the Mexican War, the Spanish-American War, wars that made absolutely no sense for the United States to enter, like World War I, and persecuted and prosecuted those Americans, those millions and millions of Americans who said, hey, I don't want to be drafted into fighting some European war just because the United States bankers are afraid that Germany's going to win. That's what it was all about, really. And on and on. Conservatives opposed the union movement in the 1930s. The conservatives supported segregation and all the Jim Crow laws. You know, wait a minute, those were Democrats. I didn't say anything about political party. I said conservatives. So that's all they've ever wanted to conserve. They wanted to conserve the right for only, as they define, love and marriage. And it's on and on and on. So these people have always stood in the way of progress. These people have, if you think... if the conservatives would have won, we would still have a slave nation where only white property males could vote. They say, oh, that's history. Well, they act no different today. They're the same bunch. They're absolutely the same bunch today. And they're a pack of hypocritical frauds. You know, they're so happy because there's $4.5 billion in sales of religious paraphernalia. $4.5 billion of people going into these Bible stores and buying this stuff, which is cool. That's their stuff. However, there's $20 billion spent on pornography. $20 billion spent on pornography, if you can imagine that, which is more than like all the professional sports put together. And I'll tell you why this is really hypocritical. There's this county in Utah that had the second highest vote for George W. Bush. I'm telling you this from memory. I should have brought this story in. Second highest vote percentage for Bush in the last election. And they prosecuted somebody that was selling pornography. And they said, because this violates community standards, because we are a religious, devoutly Mormon community, and we are all these right-wing fundamentalist Christians. Or I don't know if Mormonism is that. But anyways, you know, we're down with the Lord. So, and this person is this distortion of our community values. Well, the defense, the people that the person selling the pornographic films subpoenaed the records of these video stores and stores that sold sexual stuff, and also the TV channels and their you know, listening viewing patterns, the ratings. And guess what? These devout Christians were all watching pornography. They were renting. They were renting pornographic films at a rate higher than in counties that were that went for Kerry, for instance. And they were all watching, what's that thing, like the Nasty Housewives or whatever the hell it is. Psychos. Hypocrites is what I say. You tell me what you think, though. That's just my opinion. One among many. Peter Werby is my name. Night Call is the show. And it's 313-298-WRIF. Here is Mike in Port Huron. Hey, Mike, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Welcome back.
Thank you. Hey, turn your radio off. I didn't even know we're on a delay, but I guess we are.
I guess so. I didn't realize it either. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You know what I find real interesting is that groups of Americans today, and Christians in particular, seem to identify and frame a sort of behavior they don't agree with.
Uh-huh.
And then seek to collectively punish the group that's engaging in the behavior they don't approve of.
Yeah, well said. That's exactly what's going on.
And, you know, I think the big thing about this gay marriage thing that got on the ballot, I think it was part of Karl Rove's chess game, that you saw that a lot of these gay marriage measures went on ballots in battleground states because they knew that people that may not come to the polls that would vote for Bush
right.
would be inspired to come for gay marriage issue on the ballot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so it's all cynical. It's all corrupt. And that's why, you know, I'd say rather than the Bush presidency, that I call it Bushco. You know, it's Bush Incorporated that has always two facets to it. One is to shift more of our money and more of the wealth that we all produce by our daily work to those already wealthy and powerful that don't need it, whereas the middle class and the working class, we need more of our productivity back to us. So we're having increasingly a distribution of wealth that makes the United States look something like Guatemala. The second thing is everything they do, whether it's abortion or gay rights or all this crap about Social Security, which the system is just fine. This is another lie brought to you by the people that said there was weapons of mass destruction, to this thing about tort reform, where the lawyers are draining are causing the great rise in health care costs, which is just nonsense. It's all lies. I mean, the reason, for instance, that Bush wants to peg the damages that someone can collect to $250,000 is, of course, he doesn't want the corporations that he represents to have to pay for the mistakes, for the deadly products that they put out frequently that injure and sicken people. And the second thing is trial lawyers, because they make a lot of money, but they usually have big hearts because they represent people that have been hurt by corporations, and they give a lot of money to the Democratic Party. So whenever they do this stuff, faith-based initiative, all of it, it's all based, as you said, on the evil power behind the throne, Karl Rove, to erode the electoral base and the financial base of the Democratic Party. So there's never an instance where there's true, authentic, ethical beliefs at work. These folks have two things on their mind, money and power. And they use all this stuff about Christianity. I mean, they've got some authentic nuts behind them, the kind of Ayatollah types, except they're Christians. But the people that are running the show, Bush and Cheney and Karl Rove and Rumsfeld, they're about money, they're about power, they're about nothing else, and we are their victims. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call, Mike. Oh, well, let's see. What are we doing for time here? Maybe, how should we do this? All right, we're gonna let loose with where I was pretty quickly. Let's see, shoving things. Okay, Christopher is screaming at me. Jesus, man, take an anger management course or something like that. You want to shove 100% tax rates down our throats. Where do you get that from? I mean, what is that all about? You want to shove gun bans down our throat. Where do we talk about tonight? You want to shove onerous and unending regulation down our throats. You want to destroy private property rights and the means of production of a crumb that has always required extraordinary amounts of money. Well, I don't know what, you know, here, this is one of the whacks that I'm talking about. This is one of a right-wing twistoid. You want to shove 100% tax rates down our throat. No, actually, I want to reduce taxes for the vast majority of American people. That's what I want to do. And even to the point where I say there ought to be a $50,000 tax exemption. So the tax rate begins when people make over 50 grand. Let's maybe even for a family. I mean, I don't have this all worked out. I'm not a politician. But I know right now is that we're being looted by the upper classes. And I doubt if Christopher is in the upper classes. He's just probably a working class slob like the rest of us, except he's so filled with resentment and hatred and all of that stuff that he, rather than turning on his masters, that he takes it out on the people below him. So actually, what happens in countries that have health programs, that aren't at war all the time, that aren't environmental disasters, that aren't political systems that are repressive, one of the most repressive of the so-called democratic countries, that has one of the worst records for women's rights, that has the worst record of racial relations, and on and on and on and on like that, he is going to say, you want to shove 100% tax rates down our throat. Well, that's not what they do in Europe, where things are much more peaceful, or in Canada, where they, you know, where the roads are good and they have national rail systems. Bush wants to eliminate the national rail system. Rather than being able to take transportation all over the country that's government subsidized the way that it should be, our money goes to Bush's pals, right? In Halliburton, in the Carlyle Group. And who to his uncle, right? Did you see that latest thing? Let me see if I can get to it real quickly. Bush's popularity is dropping, by the way. It's below 50%, which is good. Somewhere in here, do I have this? About Bush's uncle just cashed out on all this money. I guess it's in another pile, but I'll get it. But Christopher, that's my advice. Take an anger management course. And the plans of the Christian conservative writer are infinitely more palatable than the monstrous schemes of people like you. I've said no schemes. I mean, I have some ideas how to make this a good country, a fair country, a healthy country, a beautiful country, a peaceful country, which is the opposite of the angry men like this. And you say, well, Pete, you were just sounding pretty angry. Well, I mean, I'm kind of angry when we have a president that was initially stole the election to get in office in the first place, brought us into this war that he lied about completely, is unraveling the environmental regulations. He said, "When you want to, we're somewhere around here. I don't know where he was saying. You want to shove onerous and unending regulation down our throats? Like what? Like what's there?" Bush has, without behind the scenes, has repealed 450 environmental regulations at the behest of polluters and the mine corporations and the forestry industry that are assaults on the natural heritage of the planet and us who live there as well. So, Chris, get a clue, dude. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with the announcement of where in the world I was and also our winner of our contest. If you got about a minute or so to check it out, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. Right back.
This is the Riff award-winning night call. This is WRIF.com.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit ucmore.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Cafe West, specializing in fresh seafood, saltwater fish, Angus beef, wild game, and poultry, located on West Jefferson and Trenton.
Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with former Philadelphia Eagle and current Pro Football Hall of Famer Chuck Bednarik, who many consider to be the last true two-way player in NFL history. Oh, God, was this cool.
Here's the thing about being a two-way player. When you play center, you make contact on every single play. When you play linebacker, you make contact on every single play. This so-called guy, you know, what the hell was his name? Thought he was a two-way player.
Oh, Deion Sanders?
Jesus, he couldn't tackle my wife, Emma. I understand they're talking about putting him into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
My remark is then, if he gets in, I want to get out of
here. Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
101.1.
Riff.
Make your request. Rent cool Riff gear. And schmooze with the vibe. It's your all-request Riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P. From the Motor City's one and only. Home of rock and roll. 101 WRIF. Riff.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Tudo Ristorante on Erie Street in Windsor. If it's not on the menu, Tudo's chefs will custom make entrees to your liking.
Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the Morning.
We made our annual Super Bowl calls, and to everybody's surprise, came up with ex-Lion coach and current Eagles offensive coordinator Marty Morningweg.
This is Marty.
Marty, it's Drew and Mike calling WRIF Radio in Detroit.
Uh-oh.
How you doing?
Ouch.
How you doing?
Well, getting ready for a game.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, tell us, how much do you not miss Detroit?
Oh, no, I miss Detroit. Hey, to tell you the truth, right down there in Plymouth, we had some great friends, and my wife and kids enjoyed it very much.
Did you want to draft Joey? I mean, there's been so much debate over who wanted him, who didn't want him.
Well, it wasn't my call. I like Joey very much. I didn't have him quite that high. At that point, the roster had been torn down. You know, we were 6-0 passing that first year with 3 different quarterbacks, and you know, philosophically, I wanted to kind of build a defense, and we just were decimated at the corner spot. So
was Jammer the guy you wanted?
There was one of 3 situations. You know, it was not my call. The call was made for the future of the franchise.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
101.1.
Is an airplane from the Cuban Air Force of the time, in the early 60s, and this is a museum that shows it's like a military museum dedicated to one battle, where the Cubans say it's the first great defeat of American imperialism, and it certainly was, because the United States, particularly in that period, was used to controlling every government in Latin America that tax dollars then funded the worst, most repressive dictatorships, including the one that Castro replaced. Castro is nowhere near as bad as the Batista that was the Cuban dictator prior to that. But there's a different standard. I mean, Castro says this is a socialist and democratic socialist government, and it's not. There's aspects of democracy there. There's admirable things there, including one of the best health system in Latin America. Everyone else's systems are going down the drain to, you know, privatization, what have you. But when countries are at war, I mean, this is their, well, a couple of things strike me. When countries are at war, like the United States did not allow enemy propaganda during World War II, and certainly not during World War I. During World War I was a civil liberties nightmare in this country. Unions were suppressed. Anybody that said, I don't think this war is a good idea, was thrown in jail. Vigilante groups forced people to kiss the flag. There were radical unionists that were lynched. I mean, it really was terrible. I mean, there was nothing like that has gone on in Cuba. Also, during World War II, our own dear fascist priest in Royal Oak, Father Coughlin, at the Shrine of the Little Flower. They used to call it Shrine of the Little Fuhrer because of his pro-Nazi sentiments. His radio show was closed down. Now, it also acts as a manner to, or as a rationalization or a rationale, which however you look at it, to suppress dissent. You can say, hey, we need independent unions in Cuba. You say, phew, you're in the employ of American imperialism. You're off to the Jusco. On the face of it, it did not look repressive, but I don't know. I mean, I'm all of a sudden decided I'm going to have to read a lot more. But anyways, we did pick a winner out of our many, many people that wrote in to guess correctly, and that's Ken Padgett of Royal Oak. And Ken, thanks for being part of it. And here's what you've won. It's the incredibly beautiful book called Cuba Classics, A Celebration of Vintage American Automobiles, Photography and Text by Christopher P. Baker. Chris Baker turned out to be pretty much of a friend of mine and has written, written the definitive tour book on Cuba, the Moon Book, the Moon Handbook called Cuba. And he's got this beautiful, what do they call those things, coffee table books of all these American cars that, you know, they stopped selling them in 1958. So when you go through Cuba, you just see, you know, 56 Chevy convertibles and 53 Plymouths and 54 Cadillacs. And you've probably seen a lot of that. This is a beautiful book. Ken will mail it out to you. And either if you're listening, wait a minute, somebody else will use Ken's name. Ralph Dizzy, will you please email Ken, tell him he's won, and tell him I need a street address that I can ship him this book. And I'll have the book on my website as well. So the photograph is at the Museum of the Bay of Pigs at Playa Giron, Cuba. And I'll tell you more about it if you want to hear. That's all I really have to say about it right now. So let's go to our phones. It's Reed in Ann Arbor. Reed, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hey.
Hi.
I just wanted to say something about the color, the paintball one.
Yeah?
He was talking about, like, why would a gay person want to get married by the religion that's suppressing them? But you have to take in mind that there are lots of legal benefits to getting married.
That's right.
And also, if I were in a country, I wouldn't, even if I didn't want to get, like, you know, married by Christianity, I would still want to have the right to, even if I didn't want to, because, you know, that's how it's supposed to be.
Sure. I mean, as I said, essentially it's an announcement that people are less than human if they are legally barred from marrying. And what, I mean, the reason is absolutely beyond me. I've been married for a very long time to a woman. Next time I'm getting married to a guy just to mess with these people's mind. But I don't think I'm going to have another marriage. But if I do, I'm marrying a guy just to say F you to these people. But in any event, they say that if men are allowed to marry men and women are allowed to marry women, it will erode the sacred institution of marriage. And they say that, and they never say how. It,
yeah,
hasn't eroded my heterosexual marriage.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. I don't even know. I mean, they have no reasoning whatsoever. They're just hateful people.
Yeah, they're just trying to, like, make up stuff, you know, to get people to go by them.
They are. And then they get people all frothing at the mouth that that friends of ours, friends of my wife and mine, will be two men, will be sleeping in the same bed in a nice house, who are good neighbors, and they want to so indelibly insult them. I can't begin to tell you, unless you know people like this, the effect that this has had on them and how hurtful this was. And I'll tell you, listeners, if any of you are out there saying, good, good, I hope they really feel bad, you're not really fit to live with other people, and you've got some deep psycho problems. I would check those out. All right, Reed, thanks for calling. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. And calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Our contest is over. I was in the Republic of Cuba for 8 days, touring all around. An incredible experience. And yet, what's the current little phrase? I haven't processed it yet. Maybe if you ask some questions about it, I would I could make some more sense of it. Hi, it's WRIF. You're on the air. Good evening.
Actually, good morning, Peter. How are you doing?
Hi.
I was listening earlier, and Danny had called on in, and she had cited some historical references from the movie about Alexander the Great. Really, in the book, The Ilium, is where the beginning for Alexander the Great starts, in that Alexander, when he landed on Asia Minor, was actually trying to mimic his hero, which was Hercules.
Okay.
And the Trojan War, unlike what is depicted in the movie, Troy, lasted for 10 years, and actually Hercules didn't wish to participate. And the only way that Hercules was gotten to participate was in the movie with Brad Pitt. It's portrayed that it's his cousin who is his second in command, his lieutenant of the Myrmidons. But really what it was that was his homosexual lover.
Okay.
So the movie Troy doesn't portray it that way, but really that was Alexander's hero. And when he landed in Asia Minor, that's when he took a male lover. And in the Ilium, it's really a metaphor for the fact that that was very commonplace. Another piece of information that is not really common knowledge is the fact that one of the things Winston Churchill is also noted for in the British Navy when he was first Lord of the Admiralty.
Don't tell me.
First time around.
Go ahead. What, Winston Churchill was gay?
No.
Oh, okay.
But what he did was he forbade three practices, and he was the one who permanently eliminated the rum ration. He eliminated the whip as a punishment, and he eliminated the practice of sodomy, which was pretty prevalent in the British Navy at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century.
By the way, though, the British Navy has just announced that it is going to actively recruit gay men for their Royal Navy.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So goodbye, Winston.
The other twist on this is I am a military officer.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a Republican. And a compassionate conservative in the fact that I label that as a fiscal conservative, but a liberal, you know, in a lot of my other beliefs.
But if you're a fiscal conservative, you must be pretty heavily opposed to George Bush.
You know, Peter, I believe that, you know, there's extreme, you know, our population is represented by a normal curve, you know, and I mean normal by a logarithmic curve. There's extremes on both ends. You know, every 4 years I get a chance to voice my opinion about the president, and every 2 years I get to do that about portions of Congress, meaning the House and then some of the senators. So I believe our system is not perfect, but I think it's one of the best systems in the world. I think that more people get involved, and I think that we need a little more competition with the Democratic Party really addressing some of their issues insofar as why they're not more popular with more people.
Well, they seem to be about 50-50. The last election was a statistic dead heat. Huh?
Yeah, you're correct. There was no real difference. But I just think that when you look at the number of congressional seats and how that really breaks down outside the popular vote for president, that I think they need and they're doing that, trying to remake their image a little bit.
I want to go back to fiscal conservatives, particularly if you're a military officer. I heard someone say that not only is this the first time in American history that a president during wartime has tried to pass a tax cut, it's probably the first time in the history of civilization that any nation at war, which has to have extraordinary expenditures, now Bush wants another $80 billion for the war, and at the same time is trying to initiate further tax cuts and permanent tax cuts for the wealthy. So as a fiscal conservative, I would find this, as many fiscal conservatives are these days, finding this extraordinarily bad economic policy.
There are some things that are bothersome. During World War II, our national debt as a proportion of our gross national product was tremendous, and much larger than the proportion of our gross national or domestic product today. I am a little troubled. I'm obviously being middle of the road here with you on the radio. one other little piece of information to pass on to you. This is a little careful, so you only know my first name and where I live, and only a little bit about me, is that I do have, you know, personal friends that I've known for years who have, in fact, and I have served overseas also recently, but more importantly, they've been in Iraq, and there are some serious indications that weapons of mass destruction did make it out of Iraq prior to the war. And again, it's this policy of engagement and not being, hopefully this time, maybe seen as heavy-handed internationally in dealing with Syria.
Well, you know, weapons of mass destruction, if there were any, there certainly weren't. Remember, they had exact aerial photographs of where this stuff was. It was all just imaginary. There was no threat from Iraq on any level. They had an army of dust. The inspectors had essentially rid the country of all weapons of mass destruction. This came about, and this is, no one talks about this. The weapons of mass destruction, the Iraq card was played at the time that Bush's poll ratings were beginning to slip again, as they had before before September 11, 2001. By the elections of 2002 were coming up, they all of a sudden said, "Hey, we've wanted to invade Iraq for a long time. Let's discover weapons of mass destruction." When this all comes out, when those of you that are 14 and 15 are listening, and it comes out in 30 or 40, 50 years from now, you say, "Oh yeah, back in the first part of the century, there was some guy that said," but this was all a fraud right from the beginning. They knew there were no weapons there.
Peter, I'm not so certain about that now. I had a serious question when that card was played very heavily. We went in and very quickly invade Iraq. So the time element for them to be able to do something with those weapons of mass destruction was extremely questionable. But now, these are friends that I've known very well, and they are on the hunt of this, and they're again, I think it's really the policy of how poorly we were received internationally, and not trying to be seen as playing heavy-handed with Syria. A lot of the foreign fighters are coming out of Syria.
Sure. Well, fighters are. Yeah. I mean, we have now engaged these fighters exactly in the manner that they choose. And in fact, all they have to do is not lose. They don't have to win. They're not going to beat the United States. But just like in Vietnam, that all the guerrillas and all the North Vietnamese army had to do was not lose. It sustained millions of casualties. And eventually the United States had to get out with its tail between its legs.
Because of public opinion and the way things were in our society. You're correct. I would also, though, tell you that there isn't a soldier who's been over there, and I'm a citizen soldier, so I mean most of my time is really spent as a citizen of the United States, not as a soldier. Anybody who's been over there, and if you see the state of existence in Iraq, and you got to ask yourself, where were the billions of dollars worth of oil money going to? It's easily traceable. There's not a soldier over there that questioned that. It's not a good thing for us to be over there. Maybe some of the motives were misplaced, but now again, there's information coming out that maybe there was something more to it. Hard to prove.
Well, they're hard to prove. I mean, that gives a shadowy suggestion that maybe there was some purpose there. But none of it coincides with the suggestion that there was not only just an overwhelming preponderance of evidence, but there was concrete evidence of hundreds of tons of stuff. There was all those aerial photographs, Condoleezza Rice saying that the smoking gun could be nuclear weapons. They all knew that that was just BS. And they have such a lack of respect for people of the United States that they knew they could lie their tails off, and even if it came down to it, that shown to there not being an iota of truth in it, that they would not suffer any political consequences. The reason that they went to war so quickly, I mean, here's France, the cheese-eating surrender monkeys that are saying, hey, wait a month, come on, we got inspectors in there, they're not finding a damn thing. But Bush and company are saying, we got to get in there immediately before they use these weapons of mass destruction. Well, the reason that they didn't want to wait was because they knew that the inspectors would say there's not a damn thing here. But I need you to give me a final statement, and I should move on.
All right. Peter, I really think that, we always look at the first order effects, and we don't understand the second, third, and fourth order effects, though, sometimes, and that I think there's a lot more going on in particular, France, Russia, and to a lesser extent, Germany, insofar as what kind of support and what kind of technology that they were providing to the Saddam Hussein regime. I think that...
But who was the big supplier of Saddam Hussein's regime? It's called the United States of America under Reagan and Bush 1.
During the 80s, correct. And when we supported the Iraqis against the Iranians in the Iraqi-Iranian War.
All these people are here. I mean, the Iranian government, the Cuban government, any number of other governments are like that. Are there because of failed U.S. foreign policy, because of our backing of some of the worst torture states, corrupt dictatorships, and what have you. Then we're horrified when we find out that the Iranians don't like us, or that Iraq has this dictator, or Cuba has this dictatorship. And these only came about because of the way the United States backed all the governments prior to them. But, hey, I got to move on.
Hey, real fast, though.
Sure.
I'd like to slip out underneath that, from underneath that about, in the near-term U.S. policies was that a lot of the way that the borders for a lot of these countries were established was really the British involvement in the Middle East.
Sure. They really gave us all a poison pill. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Thanks, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Wait a minute. Was I talking to Mike? No. Anyway, sorry. Speaking of GIs, welcome home to the 70-plus soldiers of the Detachment 1, Company G, 185th Aviation, Michigan Army National Guard. They got back without any deaths. That's wonderful. So there's some of this stuff that's come out. Remember, support our troops, don't spit on the troops. Always the governments who spits on the truth. This from the Christian Science Monitor. Veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts are now showing up in the nation's homeless shelters. So these are the men and women, probably mostly men, but some women, who fight over in Iraq and Afghanistan. And their situation when they come back is increasing homelessness. This is what Pete Dougherty, National Director of the VA's Homeless Veterans Programs. Mental health experts are predicting that as many as one-third of all Iraqi veterans will suffer from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, a disabling disorder characterized by flashback and war nightmares. So this is what we've, and there's going to be like 500,000 veterans or something like that. A similar percentage of Vietnam veterans have been diagnosed with the disorder, although it took decades for the government to recognize, treat, and compensate those veterans. Again, spitting on the veterans, not a long-haired anti-war activist who never did that to begin with, but the damn government of the United States who uses and abuses young men and women. Still, the Veterans Administration officially maintains there is no connection between military combat and homelessness, but people who work with veterans believe otherwise. Many people will tell you that military service is not a significant contributing factor to homelessness, but it clearly is a factor. This is the national director of the VA's Homeless Veterans Program. So what's Bushko doing? This guy that loved the veterans. All those Democrats, they don't support our troops and anything like that. Well, Bush's budget would more than double copayment charge to many veterans for prescription drugs and would require some to pay a new fee of $250 a year to use government health care. Administrations say those proposals are in the $2.5 trillion budget. So, what can you say? I mean, how can these hypocrites, these liars, these people who couldn't care less about the troops, who stand behind flags, little flags on their pin, these guys that were draft dodgers, not draft objectors, people that objected to the war in Vietnam and said, hell no, I won't go. But these warmongers who rooted on the people that did fight the Vietnam War now are sending another generation off and at the same time raising prescription prices for many veterans. So where's the money going, though? There's no money. Well, I mean, of course, there's no money because the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. But also, Bush is asking Congress, I mean, are you ready for this? I mean, this is coming out of your tax dollars and mine. It doesn't matter if you're like our last caller, a compassionate conservative who's a military officer, or you're a flaming, off-the-charts anarchist like me or whatever. We're all paying the same thing. The IRS doesn't look and say, what's his politics? Well, they do if you're wealthy. If you're a wealthy Republican, you know, then you get a lot less taxation. But anyways, Bush is asking Congress to set up a $400 million fund to reward nations that have taken political and economic risks to join the U.S.-led coalitions in Iraq and Afghanistan. So they want to take almost $500 million of our money and turn it over like to Poland and Hungary. In places like that, Philippines, Norway, Honduras. Well, actually, those are the ones that have left. In fact, Spain, Singapore, Nicaragua, New Zealand, Thailand, the Philippines, Norway, and Honduras have left the coalition. Remember what they were calling it? The coalition of the willing. So it turns out even more that it was a coalition of the billing. Those countries that understood that they would stand to reap hundreds of millions of dollars of benefits, either by allowing their countries like Hungary to be used as bases in Romania, or the fact that they were going to take our tax dollars and turn it over directly as a reward, a bonus, a tip, a bribe. You worked your damn butt off this week, and instead of it going into your pockets so you could buy what you need for yourself or your kids or whatever else you're doing with your money, Bush wants to take it and send it over to the coalition of the billing. So, I mean, I always wonder, what would these Republicans, because, you know, these people are fanatics. You tell us, well, Kerry, blah, 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 and you go, yeah, the guy's a jerk. You never hear that. I mean, it's the fascist mentality, the authoritarian mind, complete allegiance to the grand leader. So they're never going to find any fault. I mean, have you ever heard a Republican say, almost got it out of our last caller, that said, well, there's little questions about the economic policies of Bush because I'm a fiscal conservative. If you're a fiscal conservative and all the debts having to do with our economy are growing, and Bush wants a tax cut in the middle of a war, something that's never been done in the history of civilization, well, shouldn't it do a little more than have questions about it? Shouldn't it be denounced? So I wonder if you say to the Republicans, well, we want to give $400 million, and then you're talking about them. Well, that's okay. I don't mind if they take my money and give it to Poland. Whew. I mean, can you believe this? There's a couple more little things in here. I think I usually group these things together. Yeah, maybe that was it. I don't know. My friend Mike, never mind. I don't even have to talk about him. Where are we going next? Okay, we're going to go up to the person who I misidentified earlier, but right now it's actually Mike from Farmington Hills. Mike, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Actually, it's Todd from Farmington Hills.
Huh, maybe it was Mike. Hi, Todd.
Hey, Peter. I love listening to you. I don't listen to you all the time, but when I do, I'm fascinated with your views on things. I will identify myself as a Republican, conservative, but I personally do have a lot of problems with what's going on in the political arena today with Bush. And I've been down on this Iraq war the whole time. I don't totally understand what's going on with these tax cuts, other than I hope that he is hoping that it's going to spur economic activity, you know, and actually generate more tax revenue. But what I wanted to hear from you, in fact, I'm just going to make my comment and then I'll hang up and I want to hear what you think about it, is I think that both sides of our two-party system are in cahoots. And I think they put on this big show for us to think that they're fighting for one side or another, when really, I think they're in cahoots together. I think Ted Kennedy and George Bush, they're buddies, they're pals. And I think this gay marriage debate is just like the abortion debate. It's just a big diversion, for us, Joe Blow citizens to sit around and fight about while, like you said, we're getting bilked all the time, our tax dollars, whether they're going to Poland or whether they're going to some other, project, Halliburton, whatever. I think we're all getting screwed, and I think a lot of it has to do with it. It's very expensive to get elected in this country, and when you do, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you owe a lot of people favors, and you owe a lot of people money.
Sure. Well, the only thing is, Todd, before you go,
sure.
I mean, you don't sound like a Republican any more than I hope I don't sound like a Democrat. I mean, I voted for John Kerry last election. It was the first time in my entire life I ever voted for a Democrat. And, I mean, usually I talk about the Democrats as being the other side of the racket, the ruling racket. And oftentimes their policies are a teeny bit more gentler on the rest of us. But you certainly don't sound like a Republican. And like I say, I certainly hope I don't sound like a Democrat. And during the 90s, I was very critical of Clinton and Gore. And if Gore had, as far as I'm concerned, been properly seated in 2000, I would have been up his butt.
I think where I'm a Republican like the last caller, I think I'm fiscally conservative in that I want our dollars to be efficiently spent, and I don't know what the best way to go about doing that is.
Well, it's not to cut back on revenues, and it's not to expend it in the manner that is currently being, that's currently coming out of Washington, that's for sure.
Well, I've lost all faith. I mean, with this Iraq thing, I mean, I don't know if it's my age or my maturity or whatever as I'm getting older, but with us creating the reason to go to war, which I thought even to me, Joe Citizen, was so transparent that, I mean, even when they finally said, well, maybe Saddam will leave, and the Bush administration said, well, you know what, even if he does, we're still invading.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, once I heard that, I thought, okay, they got such a hard-on for Iraq that they're going in no matter what.
Yeah, you know what an interesting website is, I can't remember which, antiwar.com or .org. Try one or the other, because this, most people don't even realize, but this is a sort of a conservative Republican and libertarian site, and so they're not coming from the general liberal or left anti-war criticism. I think it's antiwar.com. But check it out.
Peter, one more comment before you let me go.
Yeah.
Would you agree that, I mean, this obviously is for oil. I mean, and my suspicion is that we're trying to lessen our dependency on Saudi Arabia. And I think, for good or bad, I think we're going to be turning the guns on them as soon as we get Iraq's oil pumping.
Well, if I was them, I'd be very nervous. I agree with you. All right. Thanks, Todd.
Thanks.
Appreciate your call. I forgot about this, talking about people in uniforms. This was sent to me, and I think, I can't read the signature, it's a letter, and it says, Peter, I listen to your show every week. I'm often disgusted when fellow police officers call in with their pro-Bush comments and opinions. Not all of us are brainwashed, ignorant Bushbackers. Although, as unbelievable as it may seem, we are highly outnumbered by our fellow co-workers. I have enclosed the latest newsletter from the Macomb County Sheriff's Department, which addresses this fact. I hope you enjoy the material, and I keep fighting the good fight. And the editor of this is Patrick Massaroni. And it says, the Brown and Tan, the unofficial newsletter of the Macomb County Sheriff's Department. So it's not the official. The Brown and Tan, I think it's the color of their uniform, an unofficial newsletter of the Macomb deputy sheriffs. And they have it here, support our troops, bring them home. Why can't I find, must be on the back here. Oh, yeah, Editor-in-Chief Patrick Massaroni. Now, it also has an ad from the law offices of Patricia Massaroni and James Massaroni. And so I don't know whether, like, these are, must be his relatives, right? But I know, I mean, we used to call her back in college, Patty Massaroni, who was the editor of the Wayne State University South End. But also, to their credit, the Macomb County sheriffs, who were often called in to reinforce the despicable St. Clair Shores cops during the newspaper strike, despicable in that they played an absolutely despicable role in supporting the Detroit News and Free Press in their attempt to destroy the newspaper workers' union, the Macomb County sheriffs actually took out an ad. In the, even though they were called up and they had to do what they were told to do, they took out an ad in the Sunday Journal, the newspaper of the newspaper strikers, saying that we support the right of people to strike. So good. Good for you, Patrick Massaroni. Thanks for sending me this. We'll be right back.
Your opinion matters. Call 313. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Build it and they will come.
What'd you say there, fella?
Build it and they will come.
Speak up there, bud.
I said build it and they will come.
Well, you're a gall-darned idiot. If you think just because you build a Harley-Davidson dealership, folks will just show up, you gotta give them what they want, for crying out loud. Out in Metro Detroit, this is Biker Bob, and I'm coming to Motown in March to bring you the newest Harley-Davidson experience.
Who's Biker Bob?
Oh, my gosh, it's
Biker Bob. Is coming to Detroit.
My new dealership is focused on one thing. Can do. Smiling faces serving all your Harley-Davidson needs, from sales to rentals, service to storage, clothing to chrome. Biker Bob has everything you need to keep you on the open road with the sun kissing on your face and the wind pushing your backside. Biker Bob's is always a fun place to hang out all summer long with good times guaranteed. Listen right here on WRIF for my 60-second late-night radio talk show for advice on your motorcycle questions. We're coming to Detroit March 4th, 2005. If you want more info, you can jump onto that there World Wide Web at www.bikerbobsharley.com.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns. This is WRIM.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We had Jamie Kennedy in studio, and he was telling us about his pre-celebrity days in Hollywood waiting tables.
I worked at this place called Veggie Gourmet. There was these two brothers that owned it, and they were from Brooklyn. They talk like this, you know, they're doing. But they were vegans, but they were like the Sopranos. And it was so weird.
You eat all the soy sauce. You eat all the soy tofu. Who would you eat the tofu for?
So Ron Jeremy would come in, and when he'd come in, they'd go, "Hey, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, it's Ron Jeremy." And like they would clap for him. Like there was like one person in the room. Like it was Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
And then they turn to me. They go, "Hey, idiot." I go, "Treat Ron. Give him anything he wants. Okay? He's really good people." So a hedgehog comes in. Ron would be on the phone and be like, he's like, "Yeah, hold on a second. Do you have organic apple juice? That's organic, right? All right, I'm going to have that. Yeah, hold on. Okay, wait. What time is the orgy scene?"
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. 101-101. Riff.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRAF and WRAF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRAF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Tenney Street Roadhouse, located on West Village Drive in the heart of West Dearborn. Tenney Street Roadhouse features great American food and great American music.
Log on to www.wraf.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRAF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Lunchtime Rocks with the Doc. You pick the riff rock. You win the prizes. It's the High Noon All Request Lunch Hour. Weekdays at noon with the Doc of Rock, Doug Podell. Only on 101 WRIF. Detroit's Rock Rock Station.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We took advantage of our time talking to Al Roker from the Today Show to point out Matt Lauer's hair and how horrible it is. I can't look at him. He looks like he looks horrible.
He's freaking everyone out, Al. You guys just don't know it.
Let me just check here. He's on TV. You guys are on radio. Let's see.
We're just talking about his hair. We're not knocking the guy.
You do a focus group on this guy, you'll find people hate his hair.
They don't hate his hair.
Yes,
nobody
they do.
They don't hate his hair.
Yes, they do.
They don't hate his hair.
They do.
I said they don't.
They do.
Don't.
Infinity.
Don't.
Infinity plus one.
Double infinity.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Mike in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. Riff. 101.101.
W-R-I-F. Riff.
Riff. Riff. Riff. Riff. Rocks.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Bellacino's Pizza and Grinders with 17 locations. Go to Bellacino's.com to find a Bellacino's near you.
Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist. With the guy who lost control a long time ago. The Riff's All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit. Weekday nights at 9 on 101 WRIF, Detroit's Rock Station.
Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station.
The literacy rate was like 30% under Batista, and I think it's like 90 or 95% better in the United States. Actually, in fact, there's a lot of things like health care. Joan Wyandotte writes in, here's a wrenching fact. If the U.S. had an infant mortality rate as good as Cuba, we would save an additional 2,212 babies a year. Yes, Cuba, babies are less likely to survive in America with a health care system that we think is the best in the world. According to the latest CIA World Factbook, Cuba is one of the 41 countries that have a better infant mortality rates than the U.S. Well, that's true. And there's health care for everybody, the best in Latin America. And one of the things that people miss as well, where you average for the United States, if you take like the inner cities of American cities, you've got a infant mortality rate that's up like third world countries. So actually, I stayed in Cuba across from a huge hospital. It had been built by Meyer Lansky, the American gangster, in the late 50s, and never got to open it. It was this, it was supposed to be this luxury apartment, and the Cubans turned it into a big health facility. All right, let's go back to our... Okay, here's Luther, who is... are you from outer space, dude? Okay.
It's Sandy, man. It's really Sandy.
Oh, Sandy.
It's really Sandy, and you wouldn't like it up here. Don't come here.
To Mars.
No. But I found the $8.8 million from Iraq.
Where is it, man?
They're here.
Where?
On Mars.
Oh, okay. No, that's cool.
I'm sorry. How was your trip?
My trip was good. It was pretty unusual. I didn't really know what to make of it in many ways. It would kind of take me forever to start talking about it unless you had an individual question.
Yeah, I got a couple questions.
Sure.
I know that the hurricanes went through there, and I was wondering maybe if you saw any the devastation, or is there any reconstruction going on?
Yeah, I was in some of the western provinces where they went through a couple of years ago in Pinar del Rio, and this city called Vinales, and it's tropical country, and so things grow back pretty quickly, and I didn't see any damage to buildings. The last one missed Cuba.
Okay.
And they say it only hit areas in Florida where the right-wing Cubans lived. I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what they say.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so there's still a lot of these cars still driving around. How's that work? How do they
maintain them?
Yeah.
Well, mostly, I think, just through ingenuity. And there's parts available throughout the world. I mean, you can, GM still, or if you go to like a publication like Hemmings Motor News, you can get parts for 54 Chevy or 58 Ford or something like that. And also, I mean, some of them are restored, like the ones here in Detroit for the Dream Cruise. And others of them are just kind of working vehicles they're you don't have salt, and they don't drive. A lot of them don't drive great distances. So they're, so you got, I don't know, maybe a third of the cars on the road are pre-58, and then you got a lot of Fiats and Ladas, and I think a few Soviet bloc countries left over from the late '80s.
But no modern American cars.
No modern American cars at all, no. And a few, although I expected to find a lot more. I thought there'd be more modern. Actually, the cabs are all like Hyundais from South Korea. And actually saw Mercedes, and I don't know who the hell had that.
Right on.
Yeah.
What, how'd they treat Bush? Did you catch any press there?
It's sort of like a mirror image. Their news sounds like my show. So they're obviously extraordinarily critical of Bush foreign policy, and the foreign policy that's always had an incredibly negative impact on Cuba, even before Castro, and their big national campaigns are to end the economic boycott of Cuba, which is not that radical. The Republican-dominated House of Representatives last year voted to repeal the boycott because all these Midwestern Republicans, man, they want to start selling them stuff.
Of course they do.
Of course they do.
It's all about profit, baby.
It is. All right, have fun up there on Mars, Luther. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. Oh, all right. You got to grab the mouse now. We my phone screener and producer, Ralph Dizzy, has, you can press it if you want. You want to do it? You can do the, okay, go ahead. It's James from Westland. Hey, James, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Pete.
Hi.
How was Cuba, first off?
Cuba was the most unusual place I've ever been, but I've been to Mexico, and Mexico is just an absolute disaster, whereas Cuba, poor, in many spots, but people seem to have a good spirit. People were well fed. There's a real crisis in transportation and housing. But and you didn't get any sense of the police being on people all the time. But I don't think as tourists we would see that.
Mm.
I mean, I think it's I don't know how to frame it. I know that, that there's in some ways, if you stay out of the... I mean, there's two things. One, that there's bureaucratic control of a lot of things that that drive people crazy. I mean, in Cuba. I mean, I hear that. I know someone who lives there, actually. I'm somebody from Royal Oak. And on the other hand, you don't get this. It's not like police repression of everyone. If you kind of go for the program, you get along. But like I say, that's not much
right,
that's not an excuse.
Anyways, I have a
couple of points I'd like to make. First, I consider myself a dissident and like a liberal Christian, if you will. So if you label the whole right-wing government that we have right now Christian in any way, sense or form, that just cries wrong, okay? Because if you look at any of the virtues that's talked about in the Bible,
okay,
they go against it 110%.
They sure do.
The only thing that they do stand for is like the anti-gay thing. And even then, I'm not for that myself because I have friends that are homosexuals.
Uh-huh.
I mean, see, thou shalt not kill. Okay, that's one of the Ten Commandments that's in, courts, you know, that's hung in court, right?
Right.
Hello, look at the Iraq War.
Yeah. Well, listen, in fairness to me, I did say that I was using Christian as an adjective and not as a noun. So I was saying these people are these right-wing Christian nuts, weirdos, twistoids. So they use Christianity. I mean, we can argue forever what it's all about and all that. But the main thing is that they have this personality that is antithetical to life in a democratic society. They want top-down hierarchical rule. They want discrimination, such as against gays, encoded into law, into the foundation documents of our state, the state constitution of Michigan. They want to have control of women's body rather than allowing them to express it in the manner that they may want, choose to reproduce or not, and on and on and on and on like that. And yeah, it's onward Christian soldiers, off to war. So let me just tell you a real quick anecdote about when I was in Cuba on the last day a week ago Sunday. I was sitting outside of this enormous cathedral in what's called Cathedral Square in downtown Havana. I was sitting there with a friend of mine who had flown in from London. And we were drinking, as we tended to do, this wonderful drink called a mojito. And I was saying to him, David, you know, this is really peculiar. This is the only place on earth I've ever been. And I haven't been real exotic places, like, say, Sri Lanka or something. But this is the only place I've ever been that I haven't run into somebody that I know from Detroit. Those words escape my mouth, and all of a sudden I hear a woman say, Peter Werby, this is the last place in the world I expected to find you, in Havana, Cuba. And it turned out that she were and others were there as part of, just as you described yourself, Gary, liberal Christians who were there on a humanitarian mission. So they were bringing all this medical supplies to Cuba, even though they, like I said, they have the best health care for the average person in Latin America. That still is not enough to raise it up to our standards.
Right.
So I wasn't bashing Christians because those are exactly the people that I stumbled upon in Cuba.
But see, it doesn't take a freaking rocket scientist to see that Bush is a charlatan, okay? I mean, I'll go far as to say that Bush stands for bull manure, okay?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying
there. I got you loud and clear.
And also, I'd like to say I'm also a graphic designer,
uh-huh.
Okay? And those photos that Condoleezza Rice showed where, like, the targets are for, the weapons.
Sure, the weapons of mass destruction, yeah.
Two words for you. Photoshop.
Right. They used to say that one photo is worth 1,000 words. Now a photo is almost worthless. I mean, I can't even believe they used this phrase. Maybe it gave away their age. They said something about how the Playboy centerfold was airbrushed. And I said, airbrushed? My friend, you could take me sitting in this studio at WRIF and with a few strokes of different aspects of Photoshop, turn me into a 22-year-old nude woman, right?
Close.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I mean, I could take, like, a little, like, the clearest part of your skin on your face, and I can remove wrinkles and zits.
I've got to talk to you off the air. No, I'm only kidding. Right, in fact, I got to go right now. So thank you so much.
All right.
Appreciate your call. Let me see. Do we have time for one or more? We do. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, Peter?
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good.
I've listened to you for a long time. You're a great man, Peter. You keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Hey, listen, too, I wanted to ask you a question. Oh, about the religious right, Peter. They are wackos, and I like to refer to them as Taliban light.
Sure.
Because they're some of the sickest human beings on the face of the earth. Jewish right in our country. About Ashcroft. Now, I heard on a talk show once, I don't know if you heard anything about Ashcroft buys Nazi paraphernalia.
I never heard that, but...
And I heard another thing, too, that he bought, paid $43,000 for the Goering, Nazi, one of Hitler's henchmen, Nazi Goering, his dress uniform, his Nazi dress uniform from Auction House in England.
Yeah.
No, this is our man, John Ashcroft, the great man he is, eh? And, Peter, listen, you know... One thing I don't like to how do we get you on Days? It's tough staying up 11 o'clock to listen to you all the time.
I don't know. I've always been on it. Actually, I was on Days for a while.
Yeah, well, they have that new progressive talk.
We don't want to talk about other stations.
I don't want to mention that. Anyway, I did call the second time I've ever called the talk show, Peter, and I called one this morning. I got it this morning. I turned on the progressive talk show, and they had some right wing on for an hour. And, boy, it was upset. I called him. Anyway, he ended up hanging up on me. Peter would have been proud of me.
Ah, great. Good for you. And he pays for that time. It's the only way he's on that show. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, Peter. Keep up the good work.
Appreciate it. Stay tuned. Now, whoa, I wanted to – who do we have on? Oh, yeah, Jay Cantor will be our first guest. He wrote a book about 20 years ago, a fictional account called The Death of Che Guevara, and turned it into a novel. And a pretty interesting interview, so stay tuned for that. Thanks for calling. We can talk more about Cuba. One of the reasons I wanted to find out for myself, but, and most of what I read and learn and think about and question do I sound selfish? It's for me. I mean, I want to intersect, with the world on a truthful and accurate basis. So one of the motivations, the motivation for going to Cuba was find out this stuff. But every time when I have this information, I want to share it with you. So if you have more questions, we can talk about that next week as well. In fact, maybe I'll bring that up at the top of the hour. In the meantime, thanks for listening and thanks for calling in. And stay tuned for the interviews.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby. This is WRIF.com.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the
the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Kambati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Kambati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877-SEE-MORE. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Cafe West, specializing in fresh seafood, saltwater fish, Angus beef, wild game, and poultry, located on West Jefferson and Trenton.
Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with former Philadelphia Eagle and current Pro Football Hall of Famer Chuck Bednarik, who many consider to be the last true two-way player in NFL history. Oh, God, was this cool.
Here's the thing about being a two-way player. When you play center, you make contact on every single play. When you play linebacker, you make contact on every single play. This so-called guy, you know, what the hell was his name? Thought he was a two-way player.
Oh, Deion Sanders?
Jesus, he couldn't tackle my wife, Emma. I understand they're talking about putting him into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
My remark is then, if he gets in, I want to get out of here.
You and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. 101-101-WRIF.
Riff.
Make your request.
With cool Riff gear.
And schmooze with the Hoopa.
It's your all-request Riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rocks.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Tudo Ristorante on Erie Street in Windsor. If it's not on the menu, Tudo's chefs will custom make entrees to your liking.
Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We made our annual Super Bowl calls, and to everybody's surprise, came up with ex-line coach and current Eagles offensive coordinator Marty Morningweg.
This is Marty.
Marty, it's Drew and Mike calling WRIF Radio in Detroit.
Uh-oh.
Ouch.
How you doing?
Well, getting ready for a game.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, tell us, how much do you not miss Detroit?
Oh, no, I miss Detroit. Hey, to tell you the truth, right down there in Plymouth, we had some great friends, and my wife and kids enjoyed it very much.
Did you want to draft Joey? I mean, there's been so much debate over who wanted him, who didn't want him.
Well, it wasn't my call. I like Joey very much. I didn't have him quite that high. At that point, the roster had been torn down. You know, we were 6-0 passing that first year with three different quarterbacks. And, you know, philosophically, I wanted to kind of build a defense. And we just were decimated at the corner spot. So
was Jammer the guy you wanted?
There was one of three situations. You know, it was not my call. The call was made for the future of the franchise.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
101.1.
Is set in well, actually, it's from 1928 to 1967, the years of Ernesto Che Guevara's life and death. So, again, you were telling me the history, you were
conscious. Yeah, you were saying, how did it come about? I was looking at a picture of his corpse, and I couldn't say why. It was emaciated. He'd been starving in Cuba. He suffered from terrible, starving in Bolivia. Had gotten no response from the peasants there. And had been captured because of that. He suffered from terrible asthma. His body was emaciated when he was caught, and his chest quite wrecked from the asthma and riddled with bullets. And the picture moved me, and that began the research that led to the book.
Mm-hmm.
I think I felt also that through learning about Guevara, I would learn not only about the Cuban Revolution, but something about how the United States looked to the rest of the world.
Well, it originally appeared in hardcover.
Right.
And that was in 1983, yet it's copyrighted in 1977. So what happened to it in the...
That I don't understand. Oh, you know why that is? It's because parts appeared in magazines.
Oh, I see.
I started in 67, I think parts... And I kept having to rewrite. The more that I learned about politics and the more that as history and as the world turned and... I realized that everything that I thought was wrong, repeatedly, I kept having to rewrite. And the 77 is because parts of it appeared in magazines in 77. The whole manuscript was done in 82, and it was published in 83.
Okay.
And it came out in paper a few years after that, then went out of print and has come back into paperback now.
Why? Why suddenly has it come back? Who initiated that?
Actually, that has more to do with the vagaries of publishing. The book I wrote, it stayed in print, and then I wrote a book called Crazy Cat which is about a cat who used to work in a comic strip, very different kind of book.
Right.
And it came out in 88 and came out again in paper, and then it went out of print, and then my next book, Great Neck, which is about the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement in America in the 60s and 70s, took me some 15 years to write, and... it's because that book was published that all of the books came back into print.
Okay, well, let's look at that. Well, one more question about the printing history. You said as you began rewriting, as you began learning more and more, is there a difference in the text between 1983 and 2005?
No.
So
No. The text, I given the opportunity, I probably would rewrite it again. But finally, I learned something about writing a novel, and you have to write a novel not... A novel isn't a series of conclusions. A novel is a series of questions about the world. And as I learned that and began to turn this book into a series of questions more than a... questions are open-ended and don't require quite so much rewriting.
Right. Well, and I want to ask you about some of those questions, but maybe a way to address some of them. One of the reasons that I brought up my recent trip to the island of Cuba was that it is absolutely startling, the Che iconography that exists there. It's everywhere. There's no big posters of Fidel or Raul Castro or anybody, but Che is literally everywhere. You go on a bus and there's little stickers of Che. There's billboards in beautiful preserved colonial towns like Cienfuegos on the main square. Instead of having a billboard for toothpaste that says the ideas of Che live, they will live forever. And Jean-Paul Sartre, the existentialist philosopher, said that he was the most complete human being of our age. Wow, that's...
okay. I don't know the most complete, but I would say this. He rang with one truth. that it was right to rebel, that the conditions under which the great mass of humanity lived were intolerable, that a solution had to be found, and that one had to pursue that solution wherever it took one, in his case, to the jungle in Bolivia. And he lived that. He lived it uncompromisingly. And so his life rings with a single note. Fidel's life, Raul's life, or the life of somebody, or people trying to build a nation, people who have made compromises along the way, bureaucrats, as you say. Che's life has the purity of striking exactly one note and striking it in tune and purely.
Hmm. And the fact that his life was cut short, of course.
That may be why.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that it ends on a tragic and romantic note, and I don't say that in a disparaging or cynical way.
I think it's very likely. It's hard to imagine. I think something about the singularity of the man, singular in the sense that his life makes one statement, it's hard to imagine it continuing. Had they won in Bolivia, but before they were in Bolivia, one should say, he went to the Congo to try to make a revolution there.
Mm-hmm.
That failed miserably. He then went to Bolivia. If he'd succeeded in Bolivia, there's every reason to imagine he would have gone someplace else until he died. He would have gone on his quest as he understood it. It's hard to imagine him as an old man watching his life on a TV movie about his life.
I was thinking that I'm sure have seen Motorcycle Diaries. Right?
I have.
And then his partner on his motorcycle trip, who's a man probably in his mid-80s now.
Yeah.
I was thinking that, how unusual that would have been if he...
Right.
I think
Alberto Granados, who wrote really one of the most wonderful books about Guevara, called My Friend Che, about those years, very direct and honest portrait about a man who transformed Granados' life. You know, Granados leaves with him and ends up after staying in Cuba to help build the medical system in Cuba. And I think Granados somewhere said that. You can't imagine Che old. He would have kept going.
And
he would have died as he died.
Talk to us a little, if you would, about the. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to think of a not so big a word. The iconography, the fact that these images of Che, certainly they prevail in Cuba with a very strong social and political message that speaks to the Cuban people right there. But you go to like the fanciest boutiques now. In fact, there's been an uptick in interest in that. What do you make of that? Why?
Well, I think the problem for him, the words "it's right to rebel," which I think is the slogan that begins the Cultural Revolution in China, they had a very particular meaning. It was right to work against imperialism. As you say, it had a political meaning for him. But it's also a very open-ended idea of rebellion. Bart Simpson rebels. I think there's a famous cartoon of Che Guevara wearing a Bart Simpson T-shirt. And there's a way in which... There's a famous movie of Marlon Brando called The Wild One, where he plays a guy on a part of a motorcycle gang, and they say to him, "Oh, why are you so angry? What are you rebelling against?" And Brando says, "What do you got?" And there's something about being young. It's a period where you feel like you want to rebel against your own body, and you want to rebel against your teachers at school and the principal, and youth culture, and the people who sell youth culture always want to tap into that and turn it into a product for you to buy. And Che has that very open-ended quality of, it's right to rebel. Well, it's right to rebel against your principal. It's right to rebel against... But he had a very specific meaning in mind for that, and in Cuba and throughout Latin America, his life still has that meaning.
Yeah, and a meaning that we see both from your book, The Death of Che Guevara, Che Cantor, and for conditions still throughout Latin America,
right,
that it's a life and death issue. And but what's being sold here are these images of rebellion. So I don't know whether that's a positive or a negative.
No, it's not. I mean, I think if the results are in, you take anything and you make it abstract and distant enough like that so that rebellion can mean anything, eventually it will mean nothing.
Or it can mean rebellion means wearing a symbol of rebellion.
Rebellion, right. You don't even have to rebel against your teacher. You just have to rebel something that says, fuck the teacher.
Yeah.
Can I say that?
I know, but let's move on.
Okay. All right. Or something that...
Yeah, right.
Substitute a word, please. Whatever. And, yeah, and at that point it becomes saleable and empty.
Well, let me ask you some about the structure of this book. It's quite detailed. One would almost over 500 pages. And how does one, as a novelist, particularly as a fairly young one, since the genesis
yeah.
of this was in the
starting young
in the late 60s,
getting gray haired, as I wrote.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you find out so much information? I mean, how much of it is out of the mind of Jay Cantor? How much of it his historical research?
At the beginning of Moby Dick, Melville says, I swam through libraries. I went where I could, but there's a lot of research. There's an enormous amount of research in the book, and there's an enormous amount of research so that when I imagined something, I tried to make it fit seamlessly with what was real.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example of that, which I find odd and almost troubling. One of the things that the book is about is how the stories that we tell about history, which turn into myths and fiction, like my book, move people to take action, and so they make history. That many of the people are moved by stories, but they make real history. So I wanted to dramatize. Che was a doctor, and unlike most doctors, he took away a violent revolution, and I wanted to dramatize that in his life. So I wanted to contrast him with a great anti-imperialist figure, Mahatma Gandhi, who had taken a nonviolent path.
Right.
And in the book, I make Guevara a follower of Gandhi. I was doing a radio interview like this recently, and I heard two experts on Guevara, one who teaches literature at Barnard College, one who works, actually a film reviewer for the Village Voice, and they both spoke of Guevara's Gandhian, his Gandhi period. His Gandhi period exists only in my novel. And I didn't know what to say. I'd written a book about how fiction makes history, and it was changing history.
Were there some art forgers who created a Picasso period? And
yeah,
Picasso
something
kept saying,
like that.
He kept saying, I never painted these.
But having said that, it was true to the. I think the reason they believed it was true to the internal life of Guevara. He was a person who wanted to help people, who was moved, as he said, by great feelings of love, and yet, eventually moved towards violence as the way to do that. And that's an enormously hard, brutal, difficult conflict within a person. And you can give the name Gandhi to one half of it, or you can give the name, as Guevara did, of love to one half of it. But he thought that love meant picking up the gun.
Hmm. The book is The Death of Che Guevara. It's a novel written by Jay Cantor, reissued from its 1983 hardback edition. It's now in paper by Vintage. You're listening to the Peter Werby Show. You can link on to this, by the way, to the Vintage site that describes the book by going to peterwerby.com. There's still something, Jay Cantor, nagging at me because...
Now you're going to nag at me. Right?
Yeah, sure. That the larger in life nature of this man who helped make a revolution in a pretty small country that was this oppressive dictatorship supported by the United States, overrun by American mafia and American corporations. So, I mean, that's worthy of telling. But the fact, when it even struck me again when you were talking about these academics who are Che experts, that he has that this is an enormous figure, and you've hinted or even spoke a little to this because I've kind of asked the question before, but it's something that there's something here.
I think you have to look again. The other thing to say is once they made the revolution, Guevara became minister of finance in Cuba. He was the architect, probably the chief architect of the Cuban economy, with its some successes and with an enormous amount of failures. And some of those failures belonged to him, and they were this. He really thought that people would, could, and should work out of love of the collective, out of love for other people, not for profit in any way, not for personal gain in any way. And he lived his life according to that, and he thought that others would live their lives in that way.
He actually wanted to create, as he said, a socialist man, a different prototype of
what
human
it meant
interaction.
To be a human being.
Yeah.
A human being, as I say, who was moved for love of others and love of the work that they could do for others. That kind of purity was enacted in his life. He was not a person who was looking to get a summer house as Minister of Finance. He was singular in always trying to understand what it would mean to embody that ideal in the world and to live it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something compelling about that. It's, as I say, there are enormous numbers of mistakes that need to be put in on his debit sheet, but there is something compelling about somebody who lives their life according to what they believe in, and is ever trying to see what it would mean, despite the risks, to continue to live their life in that way.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard the joke, and I won't even try it in Spanish, but essentially the Fidel was, and this is all apocryphal, but that said to his inner circle, which of you is the best economista, the best economist? And Chase, I will. And he says, all right, so you're the Minister of Finance. And after, he said, what do you know about the economies? What are you talking about? He said, I asked who was the best economista. He said, oh, I thought you said communista.
Well, yes.
But that leads me.
You would have thought that the two came together.
Yes, that leads me to the question,
yeah,
though, that that in the West, well, let me say in the United States, particularly, that that Che, although a symbol of rebellion, in reality, along with Fidel, is thought of as someone that presided over a very harsh totalitarian society, and that what you were ascribing as these egalitarian and idealistic ways, in fact, once it was put into practice, was a bureaucratic police state.
There are certainly, how far one wants to take that, I can't say, but any account of Guevara's life that left that out would be untrue. I'll tell you a good thing about my book. Somewhere on the internet, in one of the sites devoted to Guevara, they said, people who think Guevara is a saint hate this book. People who think he's a devil hate this book, my book. So I think he got it about right.
There you go. On the back cover of The Death of Che Guevara, it says a brilliant, what the hell is that word, exegesis? Is that,
yeah,
right? Okay.
That is I don't know the back cover, but that is a word.
Okay. It's a brilliant exegesis, which I think means a good statement or expression of the psychology of radical activism. Now, one of the things, yeah, I was thinking of is that what you said right at the beginning, Jay Cantor, and that is that that they carry, this is the Man of La Mancha. I mean, he carried out the impossible dream. These guys get in this boat, they invade this country that's supported by the United States, and they actually overthrow it. Is that part of the appeal to the left?
Oh.
That, huh?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah?
I mean, yes. Yes, I'm sorry. I don't know what to say except yes. Certainly, that's part of the appeal.
Well, is there more?
There's a statement of the Marxist writer Gramsci that the world requires pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will, and that can easily shade over into Don Quixote.
Yeah.
Optimism of the will. I mean, to be a leftist at this moment in the United States, you would have to be nuts.
Well,
I take it that you are, Peter.
Well, I always say I'm so far left, I fell off the spectrum.
Yeah, right.
But so I'm not sure. Well, part of the problem with saying if you're anything is that what does that conjure up? I mean, if you say,
yeah,
you're a leftist, does that conjure up Stalin to people? Or does it conjure up? I'm thinking somebody who we would all agree on is pretty good. Martin Luther King. That people can. I don't know. Those are questions that are so frequently manipulated by the mass media to keep us from thinking critically.
True and true.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left, and obviously, I'm always thinking, man.
I should say this. He's not Guevara. Part of the effort of probably the first biography that I had to work with was, I'm sure, funded by the Central Intelligence Agency and published by Stein and Day. They used to do some of their publishing, and it was an attempt to turn Guevara into Stalin. That's not true. He was responsible for the execution of people, but he was not a builder of gulags. But neither was he Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
He was a person who said... He said two things which are very famous. One is a revolutionary, at the risk of being ridiculous, let me say a revolutionary is guided by great feelings of love. I don't think it's ridiculous, but I can understand what people might think it. But he's also a person who said, in pursuit of that vocation, somewhat many years after that, he said, we have to become cold, violent, selective killing machines.
Wow. I like the first one better.
Yeah. But and that's a very chilling thing to say. And both of those are parts of Guevara. And the question that he asks any of us is, Latin America, as you say, continues to suffer, and to suffer enormously, as does much of the world. If you're guided by great feelings of love, what is your alternative to violence?
Mm-hmm.
Guevara is standing four square for one position, that your love will, if you really want to enact that love in the world, it will involve violence. If you reject that, then you still have to answer the question, how will you enact that love? What will your action be instead? He wasn't Martin Luther King, and I find King a very attractive figure. But he was up against something maybe even tougher than what King was up against, I can't say.
Sure.
Perhaps so. What's our answer then? Because if you take him out of the Bart Simpson category, that's the question he's asking.
I think so. Well, we're out of time, and I guess I would say that we should, particularly in this period in the world's history and the history of the United States, that we all ought to be guided by feelings of love and the goal to make it real in the world.
Right.
How we bring it out and bring it about is another thing entirely.
And as you decide that and you think about it, one of the people you'll be arguing with is Che Guevara.
All right.
I will be arguing with.
The Boston Globe says, a brave mammoth fiction, shrewd and romantic in conception, dazzling and postmodernist in construction, one is left with a pan-American legend that Jay Cantor has reworked into a passionate haunting. Thank you so much for being with me on the Peter Werber Show.
This is the Riff award-winning night call.
Listening WRIF.com.
Build it and they will come.
What'd you say there, Philip?
Build it and they will come.
Speak up there, bud.
I said build it and they will come.
Well, you're a gall-darned idiot. If you think just because you build a Harley-Davidson dealership, folks will just show up, you gotta give them what they want, for crying out loud. Out in Metro Detroit, this is Biker Bob, and I'm coming to Motown in March to bring you the newest Harley-Davidson experience.
Who's Biker Bob?
Oh, my gosh, it's
Biker Bob is coming to Detroit.
My new dealership is focused on one thing. Can do. Smiling faces serving all your Harley-Davidson needs, from sales to rentals, service to storage, clothing to chrome. Biker Bob has everything you need to keep you on the open road with the sun kissing on your face and the wind pushing your backside. Biker Bob's is always a fun place to hang out all summer long with good times guaranteed. Listen right here on WRIF for my 60-second late-night radio talk show for advice on your motorcycle questions. We're coming to Detroit March 4th, 2005. If you want more info, you can jump onto that there World Wide Web at www.bikerbobsharley.com.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd, the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6840.
248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We had Jamie Kennedy in studio, and he was telling us about his pre-celebrity days in Hollywood waiting tables.
I worked at this place called Veggie Gourmet. And there was these two brothers that owned it, and they were from Brooklyn. They talk like this, you know, how they doing? But they were vegans, but they were like the Sopranos. And it was so weird.
You eat all the soy sauce. You eat all the soy tofu. Who would you eat the tofu for?
So Ron Jeremy would come in, and when he'd come in, they'd go, "Hey, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, it's Ron Jeremy." And like they would clap for him. Like there was like one person in the room. Like it was Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
And then they turn to me. They go, "Hey, idiot." I go, "Treat Ron. Give him anything he wants. Okay? He's really good people." So Hedgehog comes in. Ron would be on the phone and be like, he's like, "Yeah, hold on a second. Do you have organic apple juice? That's organic, right?" "All right, I'm going to have that." "Yeah, hold on. Okay, wait. What time is the orgy scene?"
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. 101-101. Riff.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRAF and WRAF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRAF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Tenney Street Roadhouse, located on West Village Drive in the heart of West Dearborn. Tenney Street Roadhouse features great American food and great American music.
Log on to www.wraf.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WLIF.com.
Lunchtime rocks with the Doc.
You pick the Riff Rock.
You win the prizes.
It's the High Noon All Request Lunch Hour.
Weekdays at noon with the Doc of Rock, Doug Podell.
Only on 101
WRIF. Detroit's Rock Rock Station.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We took advantage of our time talking to Al Roker from the Today Show to point out Matt Lauer's hair and how horrible it is. I can't look at him. He looks like, yeah, he's horrible.
He's freaking everyone out, Al. You guys just don't know it.
Let me just check here. He's on TV. You guys are on radio. Let's see.
We
have I'm only good. No, look.
Al, we're just talking about his hair. We're not knocking the guy.
You do a focus group on this guy, and you'll find people hate his hair.
They don't hate his hair.
Yes,
nobody
they do.
Hates, they don't hate his hair.
Yes, they do.
They don't hate his hair.
They do.
I said they don't.
They do.
Don't.
Infinity.
Don't.
Infinity plus one.
Super triple double infinity.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. 101-101.
WRIF.
Riff. Rocks.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRAF and WRAF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRAF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Bellacino's Pizza and Grinders with 17 locations. Go to Bellacino's.com to find a Bellacino's near you.
Log on to www.wraf.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all call from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago. The Riff's All Request Rip and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit. Weekday nights at 9 on 101 WRIF, Detroit's rock station.
Rock station. Rock station. Rock station. Rock station. Rock station. Rock station.
Of course, I was working with the so-called underground newspaper, the Fifth Estate, then. And bring us into the '60s. I mean, when you took that that sort of personalized individual rebellion and transformed it into a rebellion against the society of the 1950s and 1960s.
Well, I came to Detroit in May of 1967, but prior to that, I had been working as a union organizer, organizing migrant farm workers. And so I had just the beginnings of a political consciousness. The war was becoming more visible, and the effects of the war, of course, the anti-war movement was getting started and gaining momentum. So when I came to Detroit, one of the things that impressed me was that people like yourself and John Sinclair were putting out their own newspapers. I was coming from a small town Traverse City background, and it never occurred to myself or my friends that young people could take matters, as it were, into their own hands and put out their own newspaper and put out their own magazines and put out their own plays. And I thought you had to have a degree or somebody's permission. And here were, again, people like yourself and Sinclair, and then others all around the country. The entire underground press syndicate and the underground press movement was just eye-opening and very exciting for someone like myself, and for obviously for millions of other young people who were shown that doors could open, and you could open them yourself. You didn't have to wait. You could do it now.
Well, it's interesting, too, that phrase, counterculture. I think people today, particularly younger people, may think, you say counterculture, and they think of somebody with a guy with long hair and a beard. But it was authentically, if you use the word precisely, it was a counterculture, and it was full. It had its as you said, its own press, movies, theater, what so many rebellious movements did. So you came to Detroit, your eyes were open, and you hooked up with John Sinclair, who was associated first with the Artist Workshop, which had begun in 1964. Actually, we interviewed John and other people from the group who they had just celebrated the 40th anniversary of the founding of it. Mm-hmm. But then John also worked closely with the MC5, Detroit's seminal rock band. You got caught up with them as well.
Well, I Sinclair at the time, and Grimshaw and Emil Bacilla and of course Lenny Sinclair and several others were living above the offices of the Fifth Estate, as you well remember. And I just thought that was about the coolest place to live in the entire world.
It was.
To have a underground paper with their offices below you, and then the mobilization to end the war in Vietnam on the very corner. And so when I finagled my way into that little commune, I thought I was in the center of the universe and felt like I was right there where the action was.
Well, it was a correct for that counterculture, and for what in many ways typified that era, you were.
Yeah. The best thinking, or some of the best thinking, and organizers and activists of that era were, you know, in those offices and frequenting those offices and coming around and visiting and such.
You just mentioned in passing one of the people that was there was Grimshaw, and of course you referred to the genius poster artist Gary Grimshaw, who did the cover to your memoir Lost from the Ottawa, the story of the journey back by Pun Plamondon, my guest. And Gary, most known for his incredible Grandy Ballroom posters. And for those of you maybe who aren't aware of the Grandy Ballroom, isn't everybody that knows a little about music history have to know about the Grandy Ballroom?
Yeah.
Just let's see. run out some bands that you remember that you saw live.
Oh, Cream, Jimi Hendrix, MC5,
Big Brother in the Holding, Janis Joplin,
Holding. Yeah.
Did the Who play there, or did you?
I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah. I know the Who played at Cobo because the MC5 opened for them.
Yeah.
At Cobo.
Yeah. So life was wonderful. Was it wonderful for you?
Oh, that was the most exciting time of my life. And I said in the book several times that I thank the Creator that I could remember these things. Like the first demonstration I went to in New York, April 15th, and marched with 400,000 people to end the war. I mean, that many people all moving in one direction with the concept of peace in their heart was just a moving, emotional mm-hmm. thing. And to go through the riots in Detroit and see the camaraderie among the poor people, it was never a race riot, and don't ever let them say that it was a race mm-hmm. riot. It was poor people striking out against that exploitation. And we got to remember, it's so recent, yet so far away in our memory, that the Detroit Police Department was all white, and that there was this incredible drain on the black community with absentee landlords taking the profits from the black community and taking them to the suburbs. And that had been going on for generations. And the stories about how second-class produce, how once the produce gets too old in the suburban stores, they bring it down and sell it in the ghetto stores. Mm-hmm. Those are all true stories. And so to be part of that rebellion against that exploitation and oppression was a spiritual moment for me, just to see it happen.
Well, the one chapter I read of your book, Pun, Lost from the Ottawa, was when, right at the time of the riot, maybe you could relate the story, when you and Emil Basila were taking a load of, what would you have, baseball?
Brooms.
Yeah, it, tell this story.
Well, the Detroit Free Press used to run a column called Action Line, I think. And if you had a problem with a institution or an organization or a corporation and you were running into red tape, or if you had some good community-based thing that you wanted to do, this Action Line column would help you cut through the red tape and do it. And so this was after the Belle Isle Love-In, and I decided and talked to Sinclair and a few others about it that we should do a neighborhood sweep-in, a clean-in, clean up the neighborhood.
And this is in 1967 now.
And the idea, our neighborhood down by Wayne State was made up primarily of poor whites and blacks and Appalachian poor folks and Chicanos. So it was a real multicultural neighborhood. And I felt that by cleaning up the neighborhood together, we could kind of get to know each other and build community. And so Action Line printed my letter, and they made connections whereby the city of Detroit, the fire department, would hook up some hoses to a fire hydrant, and we could literally wash the streets, and this Department of Sanitation would send two trucks, and they'd park them on various corners in the neighborhood for people to throw their stuff away. And Acme Broom and Brush down on the east side donated 100 brooms, some big old push brooms and regular, like, house brooms. Well, they came in long boxes, cardboard boxes. Well, the riots started, and we never got to do our sweep-in. You told me about it on the morning. You asked me if I heard about what had been going on over at 12th and Claremont. And so me and Amo drive over there in his stereotypical hippie van.
Towards the scene of the riot.
To 12th and Claremont. And when we get there, they had a gauntlet of police cars and cops that you had to drive down through, and some cops saw all those boxes in the back, and they were just as long as rifles would be, and so they pulled us over and tore these brooms out of the truck, threw them all around the street, and then, believe it or not, you could hear some shooting from up the block, and some wine bottles started breaking, and the cops just left us there with these brooms, which they thought were guns, and we cleaned up a few and sped away.
My guest on the Peter Werby Show, Pun Pulmondon, his memoir is Lost from the Ottawa, The Story of the Journey Back. And Pun will be reading from his book and doing book signings March 4th, and it's Friday, March 4th, 7 to 9 p.m. at BookBeat, a fine store in the Lincoln Shopping Center, 10.5 mile and Greenfield in Oak Park. Now, I asked you just a little while ago how you were relating to these events, and you said these were incredible times, and they were. You remember from the Dickens things, the Dickens book, Tale of Two Cities, was the best of times and was the worst of times, because one of the themes through Loss from the Ottawa, of course, is your drug and alcohol abuse, and in fact, severe addiction.
Right.
So, and that's what I meant as well. I mean, so you were, mm-hmm. you were with music from the MC5 and the Who, these anti-war demonstrations, this cultural explosion, riots in the city. And when did this?
Well, from probably the first year, maybe 2 years, when I came to Detroit, I actually quit drinking. I started doing other drugs, of course, LSD and smoking a lot of reefer and doing some speed from time to time, but that wasn't a common habit. But the people that I was hanging out with, they didn't seem to drink and abuse alcohol like my old crew in Traverse City. I mean, I hung out with some real redneck beer-drinking brawlers up north. And these people that I was hanging out now around the Detroit Artist Workshop and Translove Energies and the Fifth Estate and other places, they didn't seem to have that same addiction and that same attraction to rowdiness and alcohol.
We drink hardly nothing.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, yeah.
Yeah. We did other things, though, to stimulate our mental capacities.
I did not inhale, though.
No, right. That would be wrong.
Okay. Go ahead.
So anyway, it wasn't really until I got out of prison behind the CIA bombing trial and the wiretapping and such.
People are going, what's this about? But okay, we'll get back to that. Go ahead.
That I really started abusing alcohol again. That was my drug of choice, and that had the tremendous ramifications for the White Panther at that time called the Rainbow People's Party, because I believe it was, I played my role in the collapse, and part of that role was functioning at less than my highest ability and being drunk most of the time, quite frankly.
Well, in your memoir, Lost from the Ottawa, I mean, the description of the effect of alcohol on you is absolutely staggering. I had no idea that it had done that to you. I mean, the depths, particularly towards the last quarter of the book, after like 1975, I believe. But at some point, I want to get back to the CIA case, because everybody's going, wait a minute, what's the CIA bombing? What's that all about? But you became a roadie with Bob Seger.
Yeah, right? Well, that was long after I got out of prison.
Yeah.
And the CIA deal.
Yeah.
And let's go back to that CIA deal.
Okay, let's do that one. In fact, I want to get you to read a little from the book as well, because this is an incredible court case that had ramifications for Watergate and for Richard Nixon and Nixon's eventual resignation. My guest is Pan Plamondon. He's written a memoir, Lost from the Ottawa, The Story of the Journey Back, and it's self-published. And we'll tell you in a little while where you can get it. It's 415 pages, and I just sped through it. Just absolutely incredible. I'm treading a little water here while Pun is finding the section that we're going to talk about. Anyways, there was we heard that there was a CIA office bombed in Ann Arbor. Was it 1970?
No, it was 1968, October.
Okay.
Someone placed a dynamite bomb at a secret CIA office in Ann Arbor, and they were recruiting graduate students and professors, the CIA was. But nonetheless, it was supposed to have been a secret office, and someone found out where it was and pretty much blew it to hell. A year after the bombing, I was charged with doing the bombing and conspiring with Sinclair and Jack Forrest to commit the bombing.
I'm sure my audience would like me to ask you, did you do it?
Well, we're like many governments. I talked to my lawyer 35 years ago, Buck Davis,
right,
and he says, don't say anything about it. And so he's never rescinded that order, and so I'm under strict orders from Buck Davis. I don't admit or deny it.
Okay.
I mean, I have a vested interest one way or another. If I said I did it, I may have a vested interest, or if I say I didn't do it. And I tried to leave it ambiguous in the book, as to whether or not I did it. Because if I can play that little outlaw card, I will. And I figure it's not my responsibility socially or civically to do the work that the FBI and the Justice Department is supposed to do.
Okay. We'll leave that part at that.
So anyway, a year after the bombing, I was charged. Now, at that time, Sinclair was in prison doing his famous 9.5 to 10 year sentence for possession of 2 marijuana cigarettes, and the entire effort of the White Panther, or at that time Rainbow People's Party, was directed toward changing the Michigan marijuana laws, getting Sinclair and the other prisoners who were doing similar sentences released. We heard about it on the radio, WABX, as a matter of fact.
The bombing, yeah.
That I had been indicted for this. And with Sinclair in prison and our other economic situations about to collapse, I decided quite quickly that I should not be captured, that I should go underground until we can try to get ourselves organized to attack this fabricated case. The point of the case is not whether or not I did the bombing. The point of the case for me was that I knew the so-called evidence they were using against me was fabricated. I never talked to this guy, David Valor.
Who was the government informant.
Well, he was the informant, and they call it the unindicted co-conspirator. I never talked to him about dynamite. I never talked to him about blowing up any buildings. I never talked to him. He was supposedly had called me and complimented me on my choice of targets. I never had that phone call. So I knew, whether or not I blew up the building, I knew that the case they were bringing against me was fabricated, and that was reason enough for me to go underground. I mm-hmm. went underground, stayed underground for a year, got a phony passport from Canada through those Quebecois, French-speaking liberators up in Quebec, and traveled to Europe and ultimately to Algiers, where I was going to apply for political asylum. And I was staying with Eldridge Cleaver in the small American exile community in Algiers.
Who was a Black Panther, who was on the lam. Yeah.
Well.
And you were on the FBI's 10 most wanted list.
Right. While I was in Algiers, of course, we had somewhat of a plan about my going underground, how we would communicate and such. For instance, about 3 blocks from our house in Ann Arbor is a famous dormitory at the U of M called East Quad, and at that time, East Quad had a whole bank of payphones, the old-fashioned kind of payphones that that Superman used to change his clothes And so we had it set up that on Thursday night at 7 o'clock, every Thursday at 7 o'clock, someone would be at this particular payphone, and they'd be waiting for a call from me. So I could call and let people know I was safe or whatever.
Well, Punpun London, could you read a little bit from Lost from the Ottawa?
Well, maybe I thought I would, yes.
And
one of the things that's interesting about our Supreme Court case is its connection to the Watergate break-in. Let me just read a little bit here. Though I didn't know it at the time, this Supreme Court decision and the Watergate break-in were connected. Years later, it was explained to me. The justices decided the Supreme Court wiretap issue on Friday, the 16th of June. According to court rules, the decision was to be kept secret until it was released by the court, in this case, the following Monday. However, someone at the High Court, I believe Rehnquist or his clerk, notified the White House and informed them the wiretap issue had been lost. This meant that any wiretaps installed by the executive branch or its agents or Nixon's reelection committee would be illegal on Monday the 19th when the ruling was made public. The Watergate burglars were sent into the Democratic National Headquarters to retrieve the electronic listening devices on Saturday the 18th of June before the Monday release of the decision made warrantless wiretaps unconstitutional. The rest, as they say, sucks.
Wow. Plummeted from his memoir. You know, we've got about 2.5 minutes left. This is we said this was going to fly through. Lost from the Ottawa, the story of the journey back. Give us just a brief idea how you were in the depth of alcoholism to an extent that I was literally shocked upon reading your memoir. And something life-altering occurred.
Well, through a set of circumstances that are almost mystical, I happened upon a Ottawa elder and a holy man. And I told him that I had some court papers that showed that I was part Ottawa and that my biological parents were both Native Americans. I had been trying for about a year to get sober, and I'd quit for 2 weeks or a month, and then I'd drink again and go just nuts when I drank, had blackouts all the time. And my close friends kept telling me that I needed some sort of a spiritual center in my life. I needed to believe in something other than myself. And this Ottawa holy man explained to me that we Ottawa often believe that what we commonly call God is really a mystery, and that I should believe that there is a great mystery in this universe and that I'm part of that great mystery. And somehow those words and that concept opened up a spiritual part of me that I had just didn't know existed, and I didn't even know I was looking for it. And so that's the story of the journey back. I finally come back to the Ottawa, am recognized by my tribe, and become a tribal council member and a respected and valuable member of my tribe and the Native community of Michigan.
Well, it's an absolute incredible story. You can hear more, and of course this is a book, but you can hear more from Pun Plamondon Friday, March 4th. Friday, March 4th at Bookbeat, 7 to 9 p.m., Lincoln Shopping Center in Oak Park, 10.5 Mile and Greenfield. And the book will be available for sale then and signing. But what about my listeners that are anxious to get it and won't be able to? You know, people listen all over the country and all over the world.
They can get it directly from my publisher at www.trafford.com, or they can get it at barnesandnoble.com, and very shortly it'll be on amazon.com and Powell's and all the rest of the electronic booksellers.
And I will have a link on my website, peterwerby.com. Pun Plamondon, thanks so much for being with me.
Hey, thank you, Peter. It's really a joy.
Hey, I'm David Hall from Rock Financial, here with the MVP Chunk.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days for the first-time home buyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance. Searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye, or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the
care you deserve. You've searched today, like every other day, for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Kambati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Kambati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877-SEE-MORE. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Cafe West, specializing in fresh seafood, saltwater fish, Angus beef, wild game, and poultry, located on West Jefferson and Trenton.
Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. It's all from the station that delivers you more. 101 WRIF, The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses like Buddy's Pizza, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Come into any of Buddy's 9 metro area locations today and enjoy one of the nation's 5 best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save with the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with former Philadelphia Eagle and current Pro Football Hall of Famer Chuck Bednarik, who many consider to be the last true two-way player in NFL history.